Back on third reading. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 9. Reading clerk, please read the bill.
Senate File 9, sponsored by Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, Insurance Code Revisions, an act relating to insurance, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
We have an amendment. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I bring you Senate File number 9, the third reading amendment number 1, and ask for your favorable consideration. Folks, I appreciate your indulgence last week when I said, hey, wait a minute, this is going too fast and we can't figure out, or at least I couldn't figure out what's happening, so I threw a giant rock underneath the wheel of the cart speeding downhill. I have since had an opportunity to talk to the appropriate agency, to various attorneys, various staff, and I am content that we are not putting obstacles in the way of competition. So I bring you an amendment to delete my previous amendment, and I hope you will indulge me again with this, although I will answer questions if necessary.
Question being called. Seeing no movement to the microphones. Okay. Question hasn't been called. We're voting on third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 9. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Third reading amendment number 1 has been adopted. Having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall Senate File 9 pass the House? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Senate File 9, Allen. Aye, Barlow. Aye, Biteman. No, Blackburn excused. Blake. Aye, Bovee. Aye, Brown. Aye, Burkhart. Burkhart. Bird. Aye, Clausen. Aye, Clem excused. Connolly. Aye, Court. Aye, Crank. Aye, Dayton. Aye, Edwards. Edwards? No, Eklund. Aye, Ayer. Aye, Flitner. Aye, Freeman. Aye, Furphy. Aye, Giroux. Aye, Gray. No, Greer. Aye, Haley. Haley? Aye, Hallinan. Aye, Halverson. No, Henderson. Aye, Hunt. Aye, Jennings. No, Kinner. Aye, Kirkbride. Aye, Larson Lloyd. Aye, Larson Dan. Aye, Lindholm. Aye, Lone. No, Laux. Aye, McGuire. Aye, Madden. Aye, Miller. Aye, Nicholas. Aye, Northrup. Aye, Obermuller. Aye, Olson. Aye, Paxton. Aye, Pelkey. Aye, Piperinen. Aye, Ponell. Aye, Salazar. No, Schwartz. Aye, Simpson. Aye, Summers. Aye, Steinmetz. Aye, Stith. Aye, Sweeney. Aye, Walters. Aye, Wilson. Aye, Winters. Aye, Zwanitzer. Aye, Mr. Speaker. Aye, Burkhart. Aye. Closing vote. Are there any changes? Closing vote. The vote is closed. 51 aye, 7 no, 2 excused.
Senate File 9, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, Senate File 9 has passed the House. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 25.
Senate File 25, sponsored by Judiciary. Corrections Exception to Defense of Habitation Law, an act relating to crimes and offenses. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
We have 2 amendments. We'll start with third reading amendment number 2. Representative Lindholm.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I move third reading amendment number 2 to House or Senate File number 25 and ask for your favorable consideration. What we're looking at here, ladies and gentlemen of the 64th, is what I deem as cleanup language. And the Standing Committee amendment, what they did is they deleted that language in regards to secure facility in the first portion of the legislation. And what I'm asking you to do is to delete the other portions in regards to secure facility. In my opinion, I think that's good cleanup language and makes the bill better. So I'll stand for any questions. I'll give the good sheriff time to get down there. I'll stand for any questions on the amendment.
Anyone for their first time, Representative Pownell?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm opposed to this amendment for the simple fact that it was taken out of the secured area because DOC doesn't contract outside that facility. They're directly in there. What this amendment does in the habitation, that would affect establishments such as your halfway houses that are contracted to DOC that have employees there. So, in essence, taking this portion of the amendment, taking it out of the bill, wouldn't change at all what the workers do. They'll continue to work in these facilities for DOC. It's not going to affect their what they have to do, how they deal with the inmates at these halfway houses. It's not going to affect what the probation parole officers have to do. They'll still do the same thing. What this bill actually does is put a layer of protection for the correction officers, the probation officers, parole officers, in verbiage that it basically states that it gives the opportunity to let the criminals know that they cannot use the Castle Doctrine. It will not change, regardless how we vote on this bill, it's not going to change what these folks will continue to do to work for us, for the people of the state of Wyoming. Let's support the correction workers. Let's defeat this amendment. I urge you to vote no. Thank you.
Anyone else, second time? Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Excuse me, first time, Representative Olson.
First time, Mr. Speaker. Thank you. You know, I'm going to push back on the fact that this is being brought as a cleanup amendment. It's not a cleanup amendment at all. If it's meant to clean up, it's a misconception by the bringer of the bill. On page 2, at the top of page 2, the Judiciary Committee removed the language secure facility under contract, because we're talking about the actual facilities, the prison. We're talking about a facility where DOC is already inside the facility. They're not going to have a contract with themselves. So that made sense to remove it. What's being removed now on page 2 under the definition of habitation is a radical deviation from the intent of this bill. What you have to consider is safety. And that's exactly what this bill is aimed at, safety. So when we have what we call halfway homes, homes that are under contract with our department, we want to make sure that our correction officers or whoever are under the guise of the department are entering that halfway house have the protections that they need. You know, I spoke about this on first reading. I really think this is a policy choice, but it's an easy policy choice for this body. The bill is tight as written, and the policy choice you're making is whether you're going to stand with those officers who go in to dangerous situations to both protect inmates and the public. If you're going to stand with them or stand against them, and I think that should be an easy choice. Stand with your officers, defeat this amendment, and vote aye on the bill. Thank you.
Anyone else for the first time? Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I'd love to stand with and support folks, but I got to make sure that I understand what I'm standing with here. So the new language on the top of 2, this is to the amendment, we're talking about who is going to be. But when we go down below, this is does not include, and what the bringer of the amendment is saying, we're going to take out some who this already does not include. So if you don't include them, it seems like they're automatically included. So somebody clarify my misunderstanding. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone for their second time before the sponsor? Looking at Representative Pownell.
Mr. Speaker, just in short, in trying to answer that question of who it does or doesn't include, if I've got the question right, and it was stated earlier, what this portion deals with is like halfway houses, things of, that are under contract with DOC. Do these folks already, it's not going to change what they do in these facilities. All this bill does is bring in to the fact that they cannot utilize a defense of the Castle Doctrine. And so, it's pretty self-explanatory that it's just an extra layer of protection for our correction officers, our probation officers, our parole officers. This will not affect in any way the way they will continue to do their job. We're just asking to stand up for them, give them a little extra protection so that they know that the criminal element knows that they can't use that as a defense. The Castle Doctrine. Thank you.
For a second time, the sponsor, Representative Lindholm.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I thought that was pretty good, and yet nobody from Judiciary is yet willing to describe or define what a secure facility is. This is an issue that I brought up the first go-around, and I've been waiting for that definition to come out, but it didn't come out. So what does a secure facility mean? It's not defined in Wyoming statute, so where do we go if it's not defined in Wyoming statute? Is it defined elsewhere? And indeed it is. Could mean a hospital, could mean a school, could mean all sorts of different places. As all they've got to do is have a contract there, and all of a sudden your right to self-defense is gone regardless, and that is an important attribute. So when you're looking at the aspect, but does not include the inmate housing of a jail, state penal institution, we pull out secure facility, do that for a reason. So while they might disagree, it fits with the rest of the statute. They didn't define what a secure facility is anywhere in statute. I think it's an important aspect that we take away that essentially being defined by somebody else's books. So, on in favor of the amendment, please vote aye.
We are voting on third reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 25. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
That amendment has failed. We are now on third reading amendment number 1. Representative Lindholm.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File number 25. I tried to clean it up. I failed. So I'm going to ask you to vote no on the legislation based on the same premise that we talked about on Committee of the Whole the other day. What we're talking about has to do with rights. Now, we're basically stating in this legislation that we've got to be concerned about our officers because this could happen, even though it hasn't. In fact, the only time something like this has happened was inmate versus inmate. They tried to use it, and it was shot down. So why does Wyoming law need this? What is the desperate need if we've got to stand with our officers, even though it's not our officers that we're at risk or are at risk from this happening to? And that's really essentially what it comes down to. So once again, just referring back to what we did in regards to Committee of the Whole and some of the concerns that were brought forward there, and what this is actually looking like. I really think this is a dive for legislation that we've had no issue with in the past in the state of Wyoming. Even the state that they say this was an issue, it wasn't on peace officers. It wasn't on the individuals that are protecting these individuals inside jail cells. So in reality, it's not needed. And when you look at how they're treating or how these individuals are going to be treated in this situation, we're essentially saying you don't have the right to defend yourself even if you're being attacked, even if you did nothing wrong, you have no right to self-defense. And I don't think that's a stance the state of Wyoming wants to take. And that's not a stance that I want to vote for. So I'll stand for any questions.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So just kind of to answer the questions that have been brought before us, by the previous speaker. You will note from House Standing Committee number one that we actually had some of the same questions in committee, and we addressed them where they were appropriate there on page number two, lines 3, 4, 5, and 6. And we did cut out a portion of this that actually spoke to the very issues he's bringing up. And I also in committee agreed to a degree with that, but I did not find the same concerns on the same page, page number two, lines 12 through the end of the bill, primarily because in the definition of habitation and the definition of home, we simply, it includes or other secure facility under contract with the Department of Corrections to house inmates. In this, we're looking to protect a certain behavioral kind of institutions in locations in the state, places where there may be an opportunity for individuals to go that do have some state function. We want to make sure that individuals are protected in those instances. But I think that this bill, after the excising that we gave in committee, actually answers some of the questions that have been brought by the bringer of the amendment. And so I think the bill as stands has been reduced to its best elements. And so with that, on and against the amendment and for the bill.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I appreciate this debate because it's actually making me more concerned. When we look at the first section and we talk about what was done with the Standing Committee Amendment, and we have two words in there, home and habitation, and then we go below and we define and we actually change the definition of those two things. But the definition isn't inclusive, it's actually exclusive of the facilities that are being referenced up above, or that were referenced up above. So my question is, if this is a castle doctrine, it looks to me like we are actually fortifying an inmate's ability to say that and I'm just going to read straight out of the bill, inmate housing, state penal institution, or other secure facility is, in fact, they can make the case that it is their home. It is their castle doctrine. And this first part would not apply. I mean, this is completely flipped. And maybe it's just my reading of it, but I think it's completely flipped. I think you do want to include it. So I'd like some clarification. Thank you.
Any other members for their first time? Representative Pownell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to probably have somebody answer that particular question, but in the basics of this bill is just a coverage of the officers out there working now, that the correction officers, the probation officers, the parole officers. This bill will do nothing to change the way they operate today. All this bill does is gives them a little added protection that the criminal cannot use as a justification for assaulting that probation officer, which has happened, I believe. I know of one case where there was an altercation that took place. There was no death, though. This is what we're trying to prevent, is a death or a serious injury, so that the criminal element know that they cannot use the Castle Doctrine as a defense. Thank you.
Anyone else? Representative Olson.
Mr. Speaker, just to be brief, I want to try to address the concerns of the good chairman of health, because I think this can get a little confusing with there being a rule, an exception, and a definition inside that exception. Just to bring us back to the idea of the bill, the idea of the bill is not to create a castle doctrine protection inside the inmate's cell. That is not what the bill does. In fact, the bill, in its exclusion of the inmate housing found on line 15 and 16, that is exactly the idea. We do not want to create a castle doctrine so sweeping inside of our penal institutions that an inmate could use that when taking the life of a correctional officer. My reading of the bill is that it is narrowly tailored sufficiently so as not to protect an inmate inside of his cell in that scenario. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative Bikeman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And just to follow up on what the good representative just said, what we're doing here is we're saying the jail cell is not a home or a habitation for purposes of the Castle Doctrine. That's all we're saying. So that, yeah, that's all I got to say about that. Just make sure what we're very clear. This is not a home for purposes of the Castle Doctrine. They can still claim self-defense, and the facts of the case may present themselves. But this is just particularly excluding jail cells, prison cells, from being a home for purposes of the Castle Doctrine. Thank you.
Anyone else? Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a question, because I don't understand. It currently in law says peace officer, now we're saying employee, and I keep hearing us referencing, you know, peace officer. But what about other employees? So the guy that serves meals, the guy that does laundry, the guy that cleans the floors. I don't know. I mean, if you can have actual, can you have inmates who are under contract as employees as well? And do they get covered? I just want, was there any conversation of what, by using the word employee, who all does that cover? Because it seems to make it a lot broader than the words peace officer. And I'm totally comfortable with peace officer. But all these other host of service employees, is that somewhere else exempted in statute or contemplated in the discussion?
Anyone else? First time. See none. I think we're going to move to second time. Okay, Representative Pelkey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, I think we're debating an issue that's already solved or addresses the concerns of a lot of the members here. Wyoming self-defense statute really allows for somebody acting within the scope of their duties to enter a facility. Self-defense, in fact, would not be applicable to somebody, to a corrections officer who's legally and lawfully entering into a cell of an inmate. If he's unlawfully or if he's there to conduct unlawful activities, then perhaps he wouldn't be covered. But right now, Wyoming self-defense statutes don't apply to somebody who's exercising their legal duties in that capacity. So I would urge a no vote on, or a yes vote on the amendment, no on the bill.
Any other member, first time? Okay, moving to second time for the sponsor. Any other member? Okay, Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I think that was really good debate, and it was probably a conversation that needed to happen based on the premise that I don't believe this piece of legislation quite saw the light of the day such as it should have. But we do good work in the House. And so it was good to be able to have that conversation. You know, I guess just as a reminder, turn to page one of the bill. 62602 is use of force and self-defense. We just heard from the good attorney from over the hill that they already don't have the right to self-defense. Does this just apply? Does this just expand the right of any employee, even those pushing a broom or a mop, to be able to essentially legally assault someone? So that's the question. I guess that's not really been answered yet. I'll ask you to vote no on the bill and we'll withdraw first reading amendment to Senate File 25.
Amendment number one has been withdrawn. Senate File 25, having been read three separate times, question is, shall the bill pass the House? Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Senate File 25, Allen. No. Barlow. Barlow? No. Bikeman. Aye. Blackburn excused. Blake. No. Bovee. No. Brown. No. Burkhart. No. Byrd. No. Clausen. Aye. Clem. Excused. Connolly. No. Court. No. Crank. No. Dayton. No. Edwards. Aye. Eklund. Aye. Ayer. Aye. Flitner. No. Freeman. No. Furphy. Aye. Guru. No. Gray. Aye. Greer. No. Haley. Aye. Hallinan. Aye. Halverson. Aye. Henderson. No. Hunt. No. Jennings. Aye. Kinner. Aye. Kirkbride. Aye. Larson Lloyd. No. Larson Dan. Aye. Lindholm. No. Lone. Aye. Laux. Aye. McGuire. Aye. Madden. Aye. Miller. Aye. Nicholas. No. Northrup. No. Obermuller. Aye. Olson. Aye. Paxton. Aye. Pelkey. No. Pipirinen. Aye. Pawnell. Aye. Salazar. No. Schwartz. No. Simpson. Aye. Summers. Aye. Steinmetz. No. Stith. Aye. Sweeney. Aye. Walters. No. Wilson. Aye. Winters. Winters. Aye. Zawanitzer. No. Mr. Speaker. Aye. Closing vote. Are there any changes? Crank. No to aye. Further changes? Closing vote. The vote is closed. 32 aye, 26 no, 2 excused.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elect to the House, Senate File 25 has passed the House. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 2.
Senate File 2, sponsored by Management Council. Legislative Budget, an act relating to appropriations for the legislature, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
We have amendments. First Amendment, Representative Clem or his co-sponsor, Representative Guru or Halverson. Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move Amendment number one to the third reading of Senate File 2. And basically, this would increase by $20,000 or $10,000 a year, money to the LSO for training purposes. We've lost a lot of institutional memory in this office, trying to get some folks up to speed on their training. This would give them the funds they need to go out of state and get trained every 2 years instead of every year. So I urge your aye vote.
Any other member for the first time? Representative Guru.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and for the amendment, once again, as the good, as my good colleague on both committees I serve on just said, this is just a small amount of training money to help our staff get the training that they need. And I know it's going to be taken up as an interim topic, but this would be a great first step. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess I kind of see the idea here, but also if this is for out-of-state travel. There's some training in-state once in a while. And it's a lot of this is more than just the LSO office. A lot of this is also legislator out-of-state travel. And, you know, there's plenty of money in here. There's a contingency of $250,000. LSO is also the legislature, not LSO. The legislature has reverted a fair amount of money in the past year, so I don't really see the need for an additional $20,000 here. So on and against the amendment, I think the budget's fine the way it is.
Chairman Greer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm fine with the amendment. We can add another $20,000 and direct a little more emphasis on this. But I think it's important for the body to know that 2 years ago
with the large turnover in the LSO staff, that our current director received instructions from Management Council to implement a training program, and that training program has been implemented. We've done some in-house training. We've done some training by bringing outside parties in and do some training, and then we have also sent people out of state to other classes. They've been very judicious on that, sending people out to other states. Maybe another 20,000 helps us. So overall, I'm in favor of the amendment, but it has been a priority that has been that we've been dealing with for the last couple of years.
Any other members? First time? Seeing none. For the sponsor, Representative Howerson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think the previous speaker said it well. This is a priority for our staff, and I would like to demonstrate to the staff that this is a priority for the legislature. Please vote aye, and thank you very much.
We are voting on third reading amendment number one to Senate File 2. All those in favor, please say aye. All those opposed, please say no. Third reading amendment number one has been adopted. We're now on third reading amendment number two. Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move third reading amendment number two to Senate File 2. Ask for your favorable consideration. We had the talk, last week about our technology program and our computer system, which is 15 years old, and updating that, which really got me thinking the next 2 years we are renovating our state capitol, and we will have different committee rooms in different places. And so because this is a two-year funding bill, I thought it was appropriate to put some money in to have some more meetings on legislative facilities, tech, and process. So for those newer members, we used to have two separate committees. One did tech and process, and one did facilities, and they probably each met two or three times per year. We combined those two committees together when we moved into to the building over here, just because we didn't really need a facilities committee when we were not in the Capitol and it was being remodeled anyway. But really for the next part, over the next 2 years, I do think there's going to be a lot of need to have more than one or two meetings a year for our Tech Facilities and Process Committee to meet, really trying to understand when we have a new computer system, different meeting times and requirements, and we're in a new building, to make sure everything's going to work smoothly going into the 2020 session. So this just asks for an additional five meetings over the two on average we have a year. So that could be up to nine meetings over the next 2 years for your Facilities, Tech, and Process Committee. There's three of us in the House, three of us in the Senate. Those will obviously change over in the 2019 election, depending on who's here. So I'm not trying to pad my own nest or anything. I think a lot of this work is going to happen in 2019. I just wanted to put it in the bill now because I'm pretty certain we're going to need more meetings through Tech Facilities and Process. Be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment, I think the Select Committee on Legislative Facilities Technologies can do this well within their current budget, well within their current schedule. And as some of the other committees, if they find during the interim that they can't, they can come back to the Management Council and request an extra meeting or two. And again, Section 8 contains a $250,000 contingency for those kind of things. So I think this is a little premature at this time. And again, the committee can, I think, surely take care of this in their normal schedule.
Any other member for your first time? Seeing none, Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And we can certainly go ask Management Council for this authorization and flexibility. I just thought it was more appropriate to go ahead and put it in the legislative feed bill now, just for transparency's sake and to encourage a process we know we're going to need the next 2 years to get ready for the move back. I just thought it was more appropriate than doing a management request. And we do have a contingency. I just thought this was a better way to do it.
Okay, we are voting on third reading amendment number two. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
That amendment has failed. Senate File 2, having been read three separate times, question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Senate File 2, Allen.
Allen. No. Barlow. Aye. Biteman. Aye. Blackburn excused. Blake. Aye. Bovee. Aye. Brown. Aye. Burkhart. Aye. Byrd. Aye. Clausen. Aye. Clem excused. Connolly. Aye. Court. Aye. Crank. Aye. Dayton. Aye. Edwards. Aye. Eklund. Aye. Ayer. Aye. Flitner. Aye. Freeman. Aye. Furphy. Aye. Giroux. Aye. Gray. No. Greer. Aye. Haley. Aye. Hallinan. Aye. Halverson. Aye. Henderson. Aye. Hunt. Aye. Jennings. Aye. Kinner. Aye. Kirkbride. Aye. Larson Lloyd. Aye. Larson Dan. Aye. Lindholm. Lindholm. Lone. No. No. Laux. Aye. McGuire. Aye. Madden. Aye. Miller. Miller. Nicholas. Aye. Northrup. Aye. Obermuller. Aye. Olson. Aye. Paxton. Aye. Pelkey. Aye. Pieperinen. Aye. Ponnell. Aye. Salazar. No. Schwartz. Aye. Simpson. Aye. Summers. Aye. Steinmetz. Aye. Stiff. Aye. Sweeney. Aye. Walters. Aye. Wilson. Aye. Winters. Aye. Zawanitzer. Aye. Mr. Speaker. Aye. Lindholm. Excused. Miller. Aye. Closing vote. Are there any changes? Allen. No to aye. Further changes. Salazar. No to aye. Further changes. Closing vote. The vote is closed. 55 aye, 2 no, 3 excused.
Senate file 2 having been read 3 separate times. Senate file 2 having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the elected members of the House. Senate file 2 has passed the House. Members, before we go to Committee of the Whole and General File, I'd like the majority floor leader and the minority floor leader to go out into the VIP gallery, and if you could find our new Secretary of State, please escort him in here for us. Okay, members of the 64th, I'd like to introduce you to a fellow freshman of the 57th. Ed and I came in, we were both 39 years old. I know we don't look a day older than that right now. But served together and, of course, was Speaker and has done a great job. And now Governor Meade has appointed him to fill the vacant Secretary of State. And so we just wanted to welcome you home to the House of Representatives. Welcome home. Good job.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to see you. Good to see you. Thank you. Thank you. Amazing. Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and members of the House of Representatives. Wow, the 64th session. It's been a long time. I was trying to hide back there, to be honest with you, because I know you've got a lot of work to do, a lot of challenging issues before you, but I really appreciate the opportunity to come up. As Speaker Harshman said, this is my home, and even though we were 39 back then, and you can do the math with this being the 64th to know how old we are now, and as I look out amongst you, a lot of you are right there with me, so no snickers there. But, you know, even though we are older, we never have made it over to the Senate, so we're not that old, right? That's right. But really, this is the House of Representatives is my home, and it's a pleasure to be here today. I tell folks all the time when they ask me about my legislative experience, I say, next to family, this was the single most greatest experience of my life, and that is not an overstatement. It was because of the people that I served with and the issues we dealt with and the things we accomplished for the state of Wyoming that made that the single greatest experience of my lifetime so far. So thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you today. It's a pleasure to be back, and it's indeed a pleasure to serve the citizens of the state of Wyoming and to serve this legislature as your Secretary of State. Thank you very much.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Again, this is a unique event here. Two groups from Central Wyoming, Riverton, School District 25. We have a club, Family, Career, and Communication Leaders of America. This is Pam Rivers' group out of Riverton. It includes Devin LaGrosse, Hannah Gillian, Cully Schamber, Morgan Dykeman, Charlene Hines, and Lily Carver. Welcome them to the House.
Well, welcome to the House. Any other members have a privilege? Chairman Greer.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, I have an issue coming out of my Minerals Committee, and I'd like to call the Rules Committee meeting real quick.
If the Rules Committee would come on up, the members will stand at ease for a few minutes. You're certainly welcome to circle up and listen. We're at that order of business now. Bills on consideration on general file. Mr. Majority, floor leader.
Mr. Speaker, please move Senate File 95 down to the bottom of the list. You have the yellow sheet, so the only change on that list is to move Senate File 95 about halfway down to the bottom of the list. So we'll hear the first five bills we'll hear is Senate File 40, 63, 89, 43, and Senate File 113. With that, Mr. Speaker, I move the House resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Representative Chairman Larson Dan.
Yeah!
All right. The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 40. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 40, introduced by Senator von Fladern. Commercial Air Service Improvement, an act relating to aeronautics. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman.
Chairman Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with the recommendation that Senate File 40 do pass. And I will turn the explanation of the bill and the amendment over to the good representative from the center of the state.
I missed part of that. I think I was supposed to say you have heard the reading of the bill, and what is your pleasure? All right, we'll go to Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before us today, members, we have Senate File number 40. This is a Commercial Air Service Improvement Bill, and with that, I think we'll just walk through it quickly. In the first section, starting on page 2, it discusses the findings, discusses how important air service is to the state of Wyoming. Does that on into page 3. Then on page 3, it starts the act itself. We have the definitions on the bottom of page 3. Moving on to page 4, it discusses the council that will be set up, an 11-member council with an additional 4 non-voting members. Discusses who those will be, 2 from the legislature, 2 from the commission that deals with aeronautics, a couple from the Economic Development Council that this current chief executive has set up, one from the association that represents cities, one from the association that represents counties, one from the association that represents airports themselves, and then the 4 non-voting members become the chief executive himself, the director of the department that deals with our roads around the state, the director of the department that deals with the folks that come to visit us regularly, and the director of the council that works on economic development. And then on the bottom of page 6, it's just very standard language for all governor appointments. Moving on to page 7, it discusses how the council will operate. It discusses at the bottom of page 7 that the department that deals with our highways around the state will be who staffs it and how the council will be paid for as they meet. On the top of page 8, it discusses reporting back to the legislative body, the committees it will report to. And then on the bottom of page 8, it really gets into what this council is looking for out of an air service, commercial air service improvements throughout the state. It continues out on page 9. At the bottom of page 9, it discusses some of the things that the council should consider. And then the middle of page 10, we have reports throughout the interim to see how the council is coming with this project. And then at the bottom of page 10, it shows that the council expires basically right after the legislative session next year. And then on page 11, it discusses various options for contracting for commercial air service and how that would go about, how it would be a great deal to make that work. And that really lays it out. And so what's the need here? And the real need is currently we have a system in which the state is paying for guaranteeing seats on planes. And that works okay. But the trouble with that is it's pro rata. And so these airlines at any point in time, and it was experienced in a community just this fall, but at any point in time, they can decide to stop flying anywhere in Wyoming with the exception of one city. And that one city, they don't have that exception because that one city, through their own local initiatives, they've put these kind of agreements in place, these long-term flight agreements in place. And so it really makes sense for the state of Wyoming to get into a situation like this because it increases our security in terms of knowing what we can do for air service. And so some economics of it. For every dollar spent, about $23 is returned. We're talking about over $1 billion a year is generated in the state of Wyoming because of air service and could potentially be lost, and a large portion of it, I think, could guaranteed to be lost due to air service. As I talk to people throughout the state, there are certain people that have chosen where to live strictly based on the ability to gain air service in and out of Wyoming. And so I think it's major. With a contractor, an opportunity to do something like this, the other thing that happens is you end up with shared baggage codes, which means when you check in at the airport and you're in the community where you'd be flying out of in Wyoming, your bag is checked all the way through to your destination. We have currently we have locations in the state where you get on the airplane and then you get to the next airport and you check in a second time. And it just is very cumbersome. It takes extra time, and it really takes the efficiency and the ability for individuals to work out of the state of Wyoming. And that becomes a disadvantage when we talk about economic diversity and economic development. Doing something like this has great potential to reduce prices. There's often times that from my community to the community to the south of us, it costs more to fly that distance than it would for me to fly overseas. And by doing something like this, I think we can get those prices down. And so those are some of the reasons that this is a good idea. I know there's going to be several questions, and so in the interest of time, I'll abbreviate things for right now and then answer those questions as they come. But before I do that, I'd like to move the Standing Committee Amendment. And what it does is on page 5, make sure I have that in front of me to describe it properly, is on page 5, it simply includes onto the council how they might select one more individual to make sure that it increases the amount of representation or there's adequate representation from the commercial airports within the state of Wyoming. And I think this could be an individual that ends up being a dual purpose and fills multiple roles in terms of who they represent. And so it's really a cleanup standing committee amendment. And with that, I'd ask for your approval on the standing committee amendment.
Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When I read the standing committee amendment, there's $15 million in it. How is that cleanup? Am I reading this wrong? Thank you.
Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was on a different amendment. I apologize for that. So I had my numbers, Mr. Chairman, if I may proceed. I had my amendments in the wrong order here, and so you are correct. The representative that asked me about that, the standing committee amendment has multiple parts, and I was looking at an original version. I apologize. And so, yes, there is an appropriation. We discussed the appropriation during our discussion on the budget bill, and there was some dis- uh, some placeholders put in the budget bill. Regarding air service, and so now we have taken that placeholder and put it into the actual bill so that we knew what we were talking about, as opposed to just a random expenditure as it was really sitting there in the budget bill. And that is that $15 million. And so what that $15 million does is it's basically collateral for the contract. Now, this contract should actually cost the state about half or even less than half of what we're currently spending. And I think it's good that the body recognizes the state of Wyoming is currently spending money on commercial air service in Wyoming. And so the whole purpose of this is to spend less money and increase reliability for the state of air service in the state of Wyoming. So the money does come in. It is basically, like I said, it's collateral. And then there's also an additional $1 million that really keeps the security in place as these two programs transition out of one and into the next one. And we're talking about three airports where this security becomes an issue. And it is truly, truly an act of Congress to bring security back after it has left. And so it is very important that we have that $1 million as transition money. Good likelihood it will not all be spent, but we need to have that safeguard in place to make sure we can continue to operate. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, like I said, the top half of the amendment, page 5, line 5, is what I described originally before my first mistake. But that's where we're talking about describing, making sure we have a member that represents the commercial airports, and then discussing the growth ones. And so that's membership. And then the second half is the financial component. And so with that, I think I've already moved the amendment, I would call for the question on the amendment, and we can get to visiting about the bill.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the amendment, it looks like the bill is setting up a council or a task force, yet you're funding a contract already. That's my first question. Is that right? And my second question has to do with the $1 million. Is that for the federal, the security transportation people that we all know and love?
Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll answer that second question first. And yes, just as I finished explaining only moments ago, the additional $1 million of this appropriation is to guarantee that we have quality security, federal security, as we transition between these programs. And so that's exactly what that's for. And as I said, it's an act of Congress, and that is no exaggeration, to return that security back to the airport of need or the airport once it's lost. And so making sure we have that continuity, making sure that is not lost, is of utmost importance. And then to the $15 million, there was a question about we're setting up a council and then we're already putting money about in there to a contract. And so the council would then report back to the commission that deals with aeronautics, and that commission would then, through the Attorney General's office, have the ability, if they found the need, if they found the appropriate contract that would work, to back that contract. This allows things to move forward rather than sit around and talk about how can we do things. This does allow things to start to move forward in that sense. And so yes, the council itself does not have the authority to do that. The other thing is the final say to release these funds still requires more legislative action, and that's laid out in the bill. But it does allow the opportunity to back a contract, collateralize the contract, if in fact the commission felt it was necessary. And notice that's the commission and not the council that's set up in this bill. So I hope that answers those questions.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Honored and supporter of the amendment. And I just want to reiterate that last piece. If you look on page 12 and under 107105, and you go down to about line 9, you'll see that, and then only after further legislative authorization. So it appropriates money into this account, and then it's only spent upon further legislative authorization. So I think that's the that's the piece where we keep control of the, of that money.
All right. Question being called. All those in, let me see here where I'm at. Question being called on the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
The Standing Committee Amendment has failed. Division. All right. All those in favor, please stand. All those against, please stand. All right. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. I think there's some amendments. Representative Walters? No? No? I think there's an amendment, Committee of the Whole amendment. There we are. Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This time I wish to withdraw amendment number 1.
All right. Committee of the Whole amendment number 1 has been withdrawn. Is there any more discussion on the bill?
Mr. Chairman, on the bill?
Yes, Representative Stith.
I want to say I speak in favor of the bill, Senate File 40. Generally, I like the free market. I want the free market to work. But when there's a market failure, there's an appropriate role for the government to step in. And this is one of those situations where there's an appropriate role for the government to play. So on and for the bill.
Representative Hallinan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to say a few things about this bill. We have no credible estimates of the cost and revenue for the commercial air service. Let's make some reasonable assumptions. The flights will have 50 seats. The purchase price of the 50 seats will be about $100 per seat. 8 airports will be involved in the program. There will be 2 to 3 flights per day per airport to a total of 2 to 3 inbound and 2 to 3 outbound flights, 360 days per year. This gives a total cost of $57,600,000 to $86,400,000, depending on the number of flights. Now assume that 75% of these tickets that we've reserved are sold. The proceeds would be $54 million at a sales price of $125 per ticket to the purchaser. If 3 flights are made to the airport per day, the yield would be $81 million. That would be a loss of between $3.6 to $5.4 million per year. If only 50% of seats are occupied, the yield is only $43,200,000 at $150 per seat, or $64,800,000 at $150 per seat for the 3-flight option. Thus, a loss of $14 million and $21 million, depending on the number of flights that are taken. As you can see from the above, we are gambling with millions that we do not have on a pig in the poke, depending on the number of flights, the cost per seat, the number of airports involved, and the number of flights per day per airport, and the percent of occupancy. How much are we willing to gamble? I say that $10 million should be enough to see if this program has the legs to make it beyond the first few years of experience. Another question, how big is the administration of the program to be? How many employees at YDOT will be working full-time with the Commercial Air Service Capacities Purchase Program? What is the annual administrative cost going to be? We don't know. And what is the estimated payoff in terms of new private sector investments and jobs created in the areas around the serviced airports? How long will it take before economic growth enabled by the Commercial Air Service has provided new tax revenue to make the capacity purchase tax dollars be balanced out? Are the supporters of this program willing to agree to a firm cap on tax commitment? Are you willing to go on the record to tell your constituents that you are willing to raise taxes in the future to pay more towards these losses and give a pledge to raise that tax? With that, Mr. Chairman, I am done with my presentation. Thank you.
Chairman Nicholas, I do believe there is a committee of the whole amendment number two.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we got a little bit off course, but I'm going to make that simpler because I will withdraw committee of the whole amendment number two.
All right, we're back on the bill. Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I would stand in support of the bill and just share with you some realities from my part of the world that a number of years ago we had a producer, an oil production company that wanted to move into our part of this. A guy that was from a county that we live in was able to move back home, and with him they centralized the Rocky Mountain Division in our part of the state. And as we lost air service and was threatened by air service, it became very disruptive. They moved that to the state to the north of us. We had an outdoor education institution in our part of the world that was taking up over 20% of all the vacant air seats until it became disrupted. And now they have to travel a much further distance to get that. We in the town that I belong to have an ever-increasing population of young people that want to move to this part of the world, to our state, that are able to work out of their homes, but they have a nexus in other parts of the country. And the key component for allowing them to be where I live or perhaps where you live is to be able to fly and get to that community to attend meetings and do other things. Now, if I live an hour and a half from an airport or an hour from an airport, perhaps like if I lived where we are currently standing, I could understand that. But if you live in the heart of the state and you're trying to attract economic diversity and economic growth, air service is absolutely critical for outdoor recreation, for industrial businesses, and for tourist travel. And so we have spent over the last number of years a lot of money, this much money, to enhance that type of service. And we have always challenged and reached out to that department that administers this in finding another way to do this. Now that we have this program that's under the governor's direction, they've come out and said this is the number one, it's the most critical thing there is. Now, can we tell you right now how much economic impact it's going to have? No, but I can tell you that how much impact it has had on my community without having it. It's been significant. And can we tell you what at the end of the day, if $50 million is going to do it? Well, that's based on a 10-year estimate, and we can't expend that money, as you read in the bill, without further legislation and authorization. I think that we need to, as we task these people to try and figure this out, like the good folks up in the land of where Yogi Bear lives, is yes, it takes a lot of effort, and it takes a lot of effort on the part of the community, a lot of effort on the part of industry, and a lot of effort on the part of the state. Same up in County 11. And so I would urge you to support the bill, and let's see if we can't move this effort forward.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I actually just have a series of questions. In reality, the bill is intriguing, very intriguing, because I see, based on last year's expenditures and projecting forward for 10 years, the cost under the current model would be right around $60 million, of which about $35 to $40 million would be the state's cost if you include the services to the capital city here. And then under the bill as proposed, I do see that the projected cost would be, well, it says about $12,291,000 over a 10-year period with a 60% investment. Anyway, the total cost would be roughly $20,485,000. I guess I'm posing the question. When you compare the cost under this bill versus the cost of not doing this bill, that's where I really would love to hear the answer. Does this bill save the state money, and if so, how? And that's really, I think, what it boils down to. We've heard a lot of different areas of discussion proposed over the last month or so. But really what I want to hear is, how does this bill compare fiscally versus the current model? Does it save the state money over a 10-year span, or does it cost the state money? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for the bill. And I would like to point out that this bill will be of no use to me whatsoever, because I live here in this community and we drive 100 miles south, or you can take the small one, but we don't, the small airplanes that bounce, but I don't need this bill. That's not why I'm speaking on it. But, we hear all the time about how the state is a small town with long streets, and so I think it's important that I stand up for the folks in the middle of the state that don't live 100 miles from a major airport, which there's a lot of folks in the middle of the state. So I look at it for them. Yeah, that's true. So, okay. I have a little voices here. But the advantage financially of this, because we really – this and one thing I've read from some emails coming into me is folks talking about, gee, we shouldn't spend money on air service. Well, remember, we are already spending money on air service, so this would actually cut the money in roughly in half. And the way that it does it, and this, my presentation on this can certainly be refined by folks that have studied the bill up more, but we've talked quite a bit throughout this session about the idea of going to bulk purchasing. We had a discussion and I think put into a bill about having the school districts do bulk purchasing for their various kind of supplies. We have looked in appropriations at having the agency that does all the IT things at doing bulk purchasing of laptops for all the computers. And we all know that if you buy things in bulk, 6-packs, 12-packs, 24-packs, whatever, you generally get a cheaper price. And so that's how this works, because right now all the airports are trying to they don't even have contracts, really. They're just sort of arrangements. And they're not getting the best price because they're only doing it for themselves. So this potential program puts it in what the realm of bulk purchasing. And that's really how a lot of the money is saved. And then just to finalize, again, remember that at the end of the bill it points out that legislative approval is required to carry on the next step. But you can imagine that any sensible airline isn't going to sign a contract or make an agreement until that they know that the money is actually there. So I think this is a great opportunity. You know, it's not something where we're buying airplanes. It's just using the power of bulk purchasing to help out the rest of our state. Thank you.
Representative Sweeney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To some of the previous speakers, through Endow and through the folks that oversee the aeronautics programs currently, they already have done and set up a matrix and do have a cost analysis. To another speaker that asked properly of what do we spend currently, including matches from the different counties, and what would this save? It is the current cost over a 10-year investment currently is about just under 23 million, and the projected cost with this program is about 12,291,000. So the projected there is a projected cost savings, and I would offer to the body that this is not only going to save money, but we truly have to invest in ourselves on this if we want economic development down the line. I am sure the folks in north of me that just landed a substantial gun manufacturer, one of their key concerns moving from the state clear to the west that will eventually fall off into the ocean is air, you know, being able to fly in and out of that community will be key to them. And this program will help enable that. To the folks that are possibly against this because it won't help your individual community because those two communities are profitable, I would just say that we as legislators not only need to be aware of what our individual communities need, but also the rest of the state, because what affects one community affects us all when it comes to economic diversity and with the dollars that that brings. So on this bill and for this bill.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think what I need today before we leave this first reading is how this $15 million was arrived at. I mean, that seems to be kind of in the back of everybody's mind that's been at the microphone. You know, is it based on some discussions with vendors, or is it based on other states, or is it based on what the price should be, and that kind of thing? It kind of gets me concerned when we put a number out there. You remember last year when we talked about buying some water rights, that we had a bill that was we put a $4 million price tag on it and passed it out of here with probably few negative votes. We got to the Senate, or when it got to elsewhere, it went down and it did not pass because they said if you put $4 million in a bill, that's what you'll pay for the water right. And it turned out to be the case because we just run this bill through this year for $2.5 million. We saved $1.5 million. So, you know, part of me says that we should be showing our hand this soon. And maybe it's okay to show your hand if you know and you're confident of the $15 million as being an adequate and justifiable number. The other thing that I'm having trouble with is, you know, what is the end game on this? You know, you talk about it being an economic development thing. And if this would all of a sudden pass and we would have these flights, two or three, coming in and out of all these towns, you know, in my opinion, we're still inferior to, you know, the two states to the west of us, the state to the south of us, the state to the north of us, and the two states to the east of us. All six states have better air service than we do. And if that's the case, you would think if air service is critical to some prospective business, we don't have a chance anyway, even with this program. The other thing, I hope that we have by amendment or something that this, I think this board would be an ideal board to determine, you know, how many commercial airports a state with our population can justify and be economically feasible. You know, it seems like we got 10 or 11 commercial airports and we got 550,000 people and I don't know if that's within the ballpark of where we should be or not, but that's something that needs to be answered before we start signing papers, I think.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and I'm on in support of the bill, and in response to the last question, there's a model and a set of assumptions that generates the dollar figure, and rather than explain that entirely at the mic, I will take it to the good chairman and let him review it. But in the end, the $15 million includes a 15% contingency and a 10% administration expenses. So that's built into it, and I can show anybody kind of the spreadsheet on the model and where the model was derived from. But it's basically derived from fuel costs, load factors, ticket prices, ancillary revenue, the number of flights, and in the different communities. So I will kind of walk around and show that, and if people want to grab me, they can. If they want me to read the entire thing at the mic, I will do that.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the document that the previous speaker referenced, I think, should have been in our boxes before we brought this bill out. I suspect that the $15 million is the result of lots of discussion. And as the previous speaker just mentioned, there are spreadsheets, there are documents, there are analyses that we should be privy to. Here are my questions. And maybe they will be answered when I see this information. But what unknowns have been kicked around in the discussion of this bill? For example, we learned last summer in visiting with our airport operators that many airlines are doing away with their 50-seat regional planes. They're going to 80-seat planes. How's that been factored in? I would like to know, what are the current cities that are being subsidized, and how will future cities be determined? Who's going to be in charge of picking the winners and the losers when it comes to cities that will get the benefit of this bill?
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a couple more questions as well, and I appreciate some of the answers that I received a little earlier. And really, it has to do with the models. First of all, I'm wondering why the current cost and then the projected cost, what it means for the third flight coming into and out of Laramie, and how with that third flight, pardon me, I should have used a different name, the city over the hill, and how that third flight, actually we still come in under the total projected cost. And secondly, really when it comes down to the projections, what are they built on? Are they conservative, or do they have a lot of blue sky built into it? I just want to know a little bit more between current and projected costs. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, here in Wyoming, it's a long ways in between places. And to attract businesses, and we're not just talking about businesses from the U.S. You know, my examples include businesses that I used to have come up to central Wyoming to look at mineral projects, and they were spending tens of millions of dollars in the state. And with that previous airline service we had, the one that before I came in the legislature, we spent I don't know how many tens of millions of dollars building them a hangar and setting them up down here in southeast Wyoming. But that service went for the last almost 20 years, and it was fine for a while, then it gradually got worse and worse. This bill is going out there and taking a little bit different approach. It's having some backup money available. They're going to the larger players in the business that can provide service for people here in Wyoming to travel anywhere in the world with direct connections. Now back to our previous airline. I had a meeting up in central Wyoming one time, and some partners from the Land of the Rising Sun were trying to get into my hometown to attend the meeting. And as it turned out, their flights were canceled because about half to three-quarters of the time the last 5 years, these flights were canceled out of my particular community. They ended up renting a car and driving up to Fremont County and arrived like at 4 o'clock in the morning. And then we had a meeting that day. And then the interesting thing is this just isn't business either. The next couple of days we go up in the mountains and they go horseback riding and stay at a dude ranch. You know, this is what happens in Wyoming with business. We attract businesses here to make things happen. They're actually here trying to bring business into the industries that actually pay taxes in Wyoming. And again, this was a world Fortune 500 company that came in. Had another company that came in from the land where the Olympics were just held. And same thing, they get stuck at the airport that serves all of Wyoming. You know, we need to fix this, or, you know, we need to just decide to have a good rental car fleet out of Denver. You know, try to rent a car in Denver to drive to central Wyoming when your flights are canceled. They won't do it. Luckily enough, I have a child that lives in Denver, so he picks me up at the airport. He drives me to Laramie, and I have two kids in Laramie going to school, so I borrow one of their cars to go home to attend the board meeting that my directors flew into Riverton on, but my flight was canceled. You know, it's crazy, the air service here. And it's not a direct dollar-for-dollar thing. You've got to have a little bit of belief in growing Wyoming, and there's other commodities, other things we're going to do in Wyoming to make Wyoming great.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On in support of this Senate file. Someone asked for the difference in the costs. The current cost, the previous 10-year state investment, which is 60%, is $22,965,000, $23 million bucks approximately. Previous 10 years for the community, and this is for four of the airports, previous 10-year community investment was $11 million. So over the previous 10 years, the current cost is $34 million. Projected cost right now for those same airports is $12 million versus the $22 million over a 10-year period. 10-year community investment is about $8 million versus $11 million, saving $3 million there. Part of the state I'm from, we have huge Trona mines. We have the company I work for. People are always trying to fly into the airport nearest me. And, it's a drive down to the capital of the Beehive State. But it's nice when they can drive right to where the production facilities are for a fertilizer company, a coal mine, four Trona mines. This is vital. This is vital. We have to have that air service. We used to have a flight down to the capital of Utah, and we still have a flight to the capital of Denver, but it was hit and miss there for a while. Believe me, hit and miss. Please support this. We want to grow our economy.
Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So a couple things I want to clarify here. You know, we're getting a lot of statements about supposed savings, and I really think that if those statements are going to be made, we need to see that, because to me, it just looks like fuzzy math right now. Right, originally when this was brought, it was supposed to phase out the ASAP program, which still I don't think, you know, the good representative from District 32 talked about it. Even if it did phase out that ASAP program, it wouldn't be close to paying for itself. But Now it's become clear that it's not going to phase out the ASAP program, so we're going to have that on top of it. A lot of the dollars that are being put into those figures as well are subsidies that are being spent locally. And so if that's going to be phased out, maybe we should reduce another bill dollar for dollar for the amount the state is going to be put in, the local government distribution bill, if that savings is truly going to come to the state, and if they're including that in those figures. So I would just urge you here that statement has real problems with it. As we progress on this, there's a lot of points on this. I also want to point out that the federal government has been doing this in two communities, community where our university is, and also up in the northwest part of our state. And you have to ask yourself, the federal government's been doing this for over a decade. Have we really seen all these positive effects that apparently are going to play out? And if we have seen them, why are the folks that are supporting this, who are quite strong, not pointing out how the federal dollars that have been used in a very similar way in those communities, that there would be those positives there if that was playing out in a positive way. So we're not seeing those effects. This is already being done by the federal government in two communities. So anyway, those are just two points I wanted to make here initially. Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the first thing I'd say is that I think we would do a better job than the federal government at everything. So I don't see that that's an issue. But to answer a previous question, it was asked who would decide. So that is, and I'm sorry, I'm kind of flipping through the pages here while people were talking to me, but if you look at the summary of the activities on pages 8 and 9, pretty much it's the commission coordinated, you'll see in page 9, section B, that are coordinated with the commission and the local communities. So that will be part of the decision process. But the other thing, just to reiterate what a previous speaker said, is in a way it's the communities themselves that decides who's, if you want to call them winners and losers, the ones that have this, because communities now pay 40%. And so I suppose that would be the airport board that gathers that money. I'm not really sure of those features. I'm looking at it from more of a 30,000-foot level. But that is anticipated to continue. So communities that say, man, this is important to us, this is important to our economy, this is important to our community matters, they'll continue to put up their 40% or 45 or whatever it is. And so, you know, if you don't want to put up any money, then don't have air service. That's okay.
Representative Furphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I wanted to discuss some of the things that were mentioned about our airport over the hill. Yes, we got federal dollars. That was after we increased emplanements by a significant number. And our community stepped up and helped that to happen. We invested a lot of private money in our corporations, stepped up employees taking that plane and using it so we could get to the level where we got the federal dollars. Now, beyond that, our planes are full almost all of the time. It's sometimes difficult to get a seat on a plane to the community south of us. But I wanted to point out this fact that happened. After our airport improved itself, private dollars went into fixing our FBO, fixed-based operation. No public dollars went into that. It was all private dollars to stimulate private planes coming into our airport, and so we used literally millions of private dollars to make that happen after our airport improved itself. So that's one of the benefits of trying to support an airport at this time. And so I'm very much in favor of this bill. Thank you.
Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So a question I would ask with that vignette is if we've seen that federal program kick in two communities, and that vignette referred to one. Why wouldn't we pursue that? Thank you.
Chairman Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I might as well join the party here. This is a pretty big deal where I live. And the communities have been working pretty much all my life trying to develop economic development and tourism, all those things. But also it's a kind of a life safety thing. There are times when I have, my family, when the kids were little, we had to get on a, we had to go places for family issues and so forth. And if we couldn't get on in the town next door, we would have to drive either to the state to the southwest, to that capital, or to the one just south of here. And that's a six-hour drive. And in the wintertime, those roads are pretty scary, especially the interstate. So at any rate, it's economic, it's tourism, it's convenience and safety for the folks at home. It's all of those things. It's not picking winners and losers. I think it helps everybody in the state, especially if you live where we live. So thank you, on and for.
Representative Sweeney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question was asked about the modeling, and did the folks that put the modeling and matrix together just make some stuff up, or where did they come up with the actual matrix and model? It was actually the major airline industry. They utilized some of their assumptions and built it around what actually exists. So it wasn't just a pie out of the sky. That wasn't insinuated, but it actually has valid concrete evidence behind it.
Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just trying to answer and some things up before we move on to vote here. There was a question early in the discussion about the administrative cost. There wouldn't be an increase in administrative cost because they're already administering programs to do similar things. This is a program that would increase airline security in the state of Wyoming. So that shouldn't be an issue. End game. So the end game, as I see it, as I look through the financials of a project like this, is it would work towards getting the state out of having to subsidize these airports because the customers would begin to pay for this. As we see an increase in usership, and that increase in usership comes from the fact that the reliability increases. The other part of the end game is to continue and expand economic growth and economic expansion throughout the state. Reliable air service has been proven time and time again to be one of the top, if not the number one driver to economic growth. And many of the other questions have been answered by other speakers, but the bottom line, does this program save money? And the absolute answer is yes. And so I'd encourage an aye vote, and with that I'd call for the question.
All right. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Nicholas's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 40 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The bill is passed. Senate File has passed the Committee of the Whole. Senate File 40. All right. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 63. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 63, introduced by Management Audit. Interfund loan accounts and interest rates, an act relating to public funds. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman.
Chairman Madden, you have heard the reading of the bill. What is your... So I need Chairman Nicholas. You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 63 do pass. And I will turn the explanation of the bill over to the good chairman from the North Central part of the state.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill, ladies and gentlemen, will not invoke the same kind of debate that the one we just had. All right. What we this bill deals with interdepartment loans or fund loans, and this arises because of cash flow differences in different types or times of the year occurring for some funds and the need to have a cash flow correction made from time to time. For example, when we talk about the department that works on roads, they have a big load of outgoing money during the summer when construction is going on, and it may not coincide with when U.S. highway funds come in. So anyway, what this bill simply does is that in the past we have used the agency pool to be borrowed from, okay? And that seems like it would work all right, except that the agency pool is made up of 400 or more different funds. So when that loan is made, and the fact that we weren't charging interest on it, all 400 of these funds had to take a hit depending upon how much of the agency pool that particular fund represented, okay? And what this does is simply say we're going to charge to the agency pool, but we're only going to be focusing on the LSRA, which is part of the agency pool, and that will leave the complications of the other 400 off to the side, and they're not going to be affected by it. And likewise, since we're going to charge the interest rate that this agency pool earned over the previous fiscal year, there's not going to be much impact on the LSRA. In fact, they'll be indifferent as to whether the LSRA would be indifferent as with respect to if a loan was made or not, because they're going to be compensated as if the loan had not been made, pretty much. So that's all it is. The other thing is that if we do have some interagency loans that come about from permanent funds, permanent funds are invested in equities, and the return on equities flies all over the place, from 0% to a negative percent to positive percents. So a better than using an interest rate, we use the inflation rate over the last year. So that makes a lot of sense, too. So that's the bill, and I urge your support of it. And if there's no questions, I'd move the question.
All right. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Nicholas's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate file number 63 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate file 63 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate file 89. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate file 89, introduced by Appropriations. Local Government Distributions, an act relating to local government funding. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman.
Chairman Nicholas, you have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it does so with a recommendation that Senate Bill 89 do pass. And I will turn the explanation of the bill over to the good representative who from my hometown, or current hometown.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Folks, this Senate File 89 is the famous local government distributions. And I think we can make this pretty simple because this is the same amount we gave them last time around, $105 million. I can get into the weeds on the formula, although I'd have to really turn it over to the Chairman of Revenue for the really little weeds. But I think what you just need to know is that $105 million, the counties get about $18 million of that annually. The rest goes through the famous Madden formula to the various counties and the cities. There was a base from the previous. We've got, and then if you were to flip through, you will find the words calculate, inverse, normalize, multiply, and quartile, so I'm really sure you don't want to hear the rest. So I just vote aye.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Nicholas's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate file number 89 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate file 89 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate file 43. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate file 43, introduced by Labor, Health, and Social Services. Organ donation, training, and timely postmortem examinations, an act relating to anatomical gifts. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Barlow, Clem, Dayton, Garou, Hallinan, Halverson, McGuire, and Sweeney. No, Representative Lone. Signed, Representative Halverson, Vice Chairman.
Chairman Barlow, you have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Committee of the Whole rises to report. It does so with the recommendation that Senate File 43 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments. I turn the explanation over to Representative Garou. Thank you.
Representative Garou.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I bring you Senate File 43. As you recall, last week this body passed a task force with regard to this issue. This bill is the task. And I know you've gotten a lot of emails about this from folks at home, and so I want to answer their questions first because I've spoken to a lot of them. This program, and this is very important, this program is 100% voluntary. This program is only available to you if you ask for it, sign up for it, have a medical directive for it. That is the long and the short of it. All this bill does is ask, and this task force, to put together with a body, a national organization housed in a town south of here, to help train. Two sets of training. One for our coroners. It's a four-hour training, which they will provide at their cost. This is the organization south of here. All the coroners will have to attend it in various locations around this state, and also representatives from our county attorney's office. The purpose of this and the purpose of this bill is just to make it, streamline it, and make it easier for people who want to be in the program to be able to facilitate and use it. I'll stand for any questions.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Where I am receiving the pushback from those who actually have to respond to a situation where, of course, a deceased person, where their body lies. Those individuals who also then have to go through the process of embalming and so on, where they are putting the most pushback is the fact that there's a four-hour training course that is recommended, and the very organization that is pushing this bill is one that there seems to be, at least amongst the individuals that I represent, tremendous frustration with the way that they treat these dead bodies. Secondly, the way that they treat our local government agencies, especially in rural areas. And there's a lot of frustration also of adding four additional hours of training on top of all of the things they have to do currently. And so I guess I'm trying to show just in my ability to represent a bunch of individuals, how those individuals feel about this legislation, and there's quite a bit of vehemence behind it. Thank you.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The pushback that I'm getting from back home and around the state is on page 3, lines 9 to 11. Any autopsy or postmortem examination shall comply with the requirements of the Revised Uniform Anatomical Gift Act. The fears I am hearing have to do with a direct conflict of the Anatomical Gift Act and law enforcement. So this is what I need to be able to go back home and talk about.
Representative Sweeney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and in for this, I think I don't really see the conflict. I understand maybe the frustrations, but in testimony in committee the other night, actually to the south of the good representative from District 28, the county coroner actually came and offered tremendous testimony on, and he's, I think, doing a tremendous job, but not all applications fit because of the limited timeline that you've got. The window of opportunity may or may not work. And, you know, so I can understand some of the objections and possibly some of the treatment that the coroners have gotten during, not necessarily to committee, but during the interim. I saw some of those frustrations, so I can agree. And as to the good representative from District 22, I really don't know the answer to that. But you know, please keep in mind that this is all voluntary. The training is simply, these folks are on the clock, being paid by their counties. As far as I know, it's not mandatory. But the other thing to consider, what we did here is that I believe this training will go towards their credit hours that they have to do every 2 years. And so I don't really see the pushback. But the goal should be the education process. Nothing is mandatory, but the question you have to ask yourselves, can we do better? And if we save one more life, can we do better in the organ transplant and organ donation? Thank you. On and for this bill.
Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I want to answer a few of the questions that have been asked. So there's basically three fundamental things being done with this bill. The first is a training requirement. We do that for all kinds of entities. We do that for those who work on animals, those who work on pets, those who we have boards that do it on our behalf, et cetera. So adding these training requirements, I would argue, are part of the duties we expect from both the folks that take care of these folks when they're deceased or near death, the coroners, and from the district attorneys and those folks that are in the law. So these two folks have a critical role in this, and having them informed about the process, I mean, that just makes sense to me. That's part of their duties. The second thing, there was a comment made by a committee person about the shall language on page 3, line 9, shall comply. Well, I would respectfully refer you to Title 35, which that refers to, 5221, and it says a coroner shall cooperate. It says this, essentially the same language. So this is just tying it from the procurement language to what we're requesting that the coroner does. So we're not, this is just a repetition, if you will, in both parts of statute saying the same thing. This is not a new language. They already have that requirement. We're taking that requirement and actually putting it in their statute so it's clear to them as well. It's not displaced from what they're required. Again, the citation 35.5.221. And that says they're already going to do, I believe, much of what we're talking about here. So education, the requirement, and then the final thing is the death registration. That's page 5 and 6. And actually, this is the only thing that we heard some reservation about in the committee when we considered this bill. And to be fair, the committee considered it. Nobody made a motion to strike it. Therefore, you know, where does it rise on that level? So if folks have a particular interest in that part of the bill and think it's unnecessary, we can have that discussion on a second or third reading amendment. But the committee, the testimony that was before us by those, some of those folks, same folks that you're hearing from, was we can live with this bill. It's cleaned up a lot from the white version. The white version, things were taken care of that they had concerns about. And if there's still something in here, especially particularly that one component, that's certainly a discussion we can have on second or third reading. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm on and against, as of right now, based on the premise that, well, I certainly support organ donation. I think we all do. I think it needs to be stated that the supporters and pushers of this legislation in regards to some of the private interests that are involved are not objective in their passion. They're simply not, based on the premise that, that this is their business. And to require our coroners to go this direction is definitely an aspect that opens up some different concerns. So we've heard a lot of concerns from county coroners, I'm sure everybody has, and we've got this task force that's passed through. So if the concerns of the coroners are not being met by this legislation, which I'm sure we've all heard, I've heard from counties I don't represent, then let's let the task force do its job and look at legislation, and hopefully their concerns can be met, specifically in the training aspect of this legislation, which is what they're most concerned about. And a lot of these coroners stated that they attended the meeting and their concerns were not met. So if you could answer to why those concerns weren't met, that'd be great.
Representative Grew.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, let's clear some things up. I'm a supporter of this bill. I'm on and for it, and let me tell you why. I'm an organ donor, and I also have a medical directive on this along these lines, as did the folks who brought this amendment. Private citizens, actually relatives of a member of this body, who brought this forward, along with another group in hand, but it was actually more organic than what was just stated. And once again, I want to just hit this so make sure everyone understands. This is an opt-in program, only available to people who ask to be in it. Second, this training, the part of the training will help facilitate, and this goes back to my good friend from District 28's question about how this process works itself out. That's at the heart of what the training's all about. The training is all about time and how this process works itself out. That's what the training's for. That's what the task force can help work out as well. But these are the kind of the steps that you go through that they can bring forward. So this bill has a great deal of meaning to a lot of folks. And like I say, when I talked to folks over the weekend, as I did every single one who wrote me and said things like, this is some government program or some takeover or something, I talked to them individually. Walked them through it, and everyone that I walked through it was fine. As, by the way, there two coroners were in the room the night that we heard this hearing, and one of the two was that I thought was completely satisfied because I asked him. I knew the other one was not satisfied. I knew that, but we did try our best, and it was one coroner, and I won't go into what my coroner told me he was going to do to me if I supported this bill, but that's a different subject. Thank you.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I know very little about this bill, so I'm going to try to find out some more information. So my coroner had some concerns about time frames, unreasonable time constraints. And so maybe that was in the white version and this is the other version. So if anybody can, if there's an issue there or was an issue, maybe somebody can address how that was cleared up or not cleared up with the latest version. Thank you.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have just a couple more questions. Number one, how does this bill correspond with the task force bill? Does this bill nullify the need for the other bill? Would be number one. Then number two, on pages 4 and 5, it says that bottom of page 4, starting at line 22, training shall be obtained from a Wyoming organ procurement organization, and it continues on to the top of page number 5. How many such organizations exist? Is it just one? Is this part of the reason why I'm getting the pushback? If there's more than one, I was just wondering how that will play.
Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So let's respond to two questions. First of all, organ donation is a federally, it's a federal program, and each different regions of the country are covered by a particular organization. So there is one organization for the most of the state of Wyoming and another that is responsible for that very southwest corner. These are nonprofit organizations that work on behalf of that federal government to enable this stuff to be done in accordance with federal law. What the states do is they have conforming language and those type of things that give us a role in this through our medical directives and other things. So this is not a free-for-all in the market and we've got competing bidders or anything like that. This is the federal government oversees this and there's a particular entity in the south of the state that's responsible for the majority of the state. Eyes are handled a little differently because they're a tissue, not an organ. We can go down that road. But this is not a bidding war for somebody's organs. This is not. This is legitimate stuff. The second question was regarding what happened from the version that came down the hall to where we are now, the concerns. My understanding was some of the concern you've heard from those folks who are responsible for this interaction, our coroners, was two amendments on the Senate, on that side of the building, took care of their considerable amount of their concerns. So if there's remaining concerns with the real business of the bill, then let's bring them. But, so the final question was, how does this fit with the task force? Well, the first thing to have a meaningful task force is start getting people engaged and educated. And I would argue these folks have this duty. They already have this responsibility spelled out in Title 35. So let's actually say it. Let's actually say, folks, this is part of your educational process. Your responsibility is to be trained to do these different things, and we're going to make that part of it. It's already part of it. We're just going to raise the bar and say, recognize it, and let's get it done. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Barlow's motion that the Committee of the Whole rises to report it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 43 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 43 has passed the Committee of the Whole. All right. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 1.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Pelkey.
Pursuant to Mason's Section 630, I'd like to call a Rules Committee meeting in relation to Senate File 74.
All right. If we can have the Rules Committee come forward. Yeah. Majority Floor Leader. Mr. Speaker. Oh. Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, and I want to, for folks in the gallery who are wondering what Rules Committee is talking about, we've had a question on Senate File 74, a bill that failed on a tie vote, 4-4, one member abstained with conflict, and then we had a member want to change his vote. The bill is still in possession of the committee chairman, okay, and he came forward after the new Secretary of State spoke, requested a meeting of the Rules Committee, wanted guidance on this, and the rules say 3 o'clock notice. So we're standing in front of the Rules Committee. It's like 30 seconds to 3 o'clock. He goes back and makes the request. The timestamp comes out at 3:07. And then so we've gone through the rules and Masons, and I think your Rules Committee did a great job. We debated it back and forth, several sections of Masons, but really in our House Rules 5-2 on page 34, and really it's paragraph A, I think, on Senate File 74, this continued consideration of a bill. Still in the chairman's possession. It's not been signed or reported out. It's been noticed now that they're going to have continued consideration. And there is some question of whether that even has to be noticed. The rules don't say that. That in fact, says just the opposite. But we are going to notice that, and we're going to have some more consideration on that bill tomorrow. And that was a vote of your Rules Committee just now. And I wanted to explain that because there's people out in the gallery and people listening that want to know exactly what's happening with the Rules Committee. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I think we're back on general file. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Our next bill for our consideration is Senate File 113. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 113, introduced by Senator Nethercott. Community Development Districts, an act relating to cities and towns. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Lone, Sweeney, and Zwanitzer. Signed, Representative Lindholm, Vice Chairman.
Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you,
Mr.
Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 113 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments on it, and I will take the first crack at explaining it to the body. And so, members, what this does is creates community development districts in our state within our municipalities, and it's really an important and necessary tool for development and infrastructure in really all of your cities and towns. So, and basically, it's a special district inside of a municipality is how you should look at it. We've copied most of those statutes from Title 18 to put them into this bill. So what we're doing is creating 1512-101 there in Section 1 at the bottom of page 1, and it authorizes a municipality to create a community development district. Walking through the bill quickly, you'll just see pages 2 through 5 are definitions, and then on page 5 and 6, we're basically authorizing a district formation in 1512-103. In 7 and 8, we set about what's basically the petition and the general plan of that district, and it has to be formed by the landowners. You have to have at least 25%, and what makes the bill unique is it's actually governed by those landowners, not really by the government. And so we, just like all special districts, we've copied another section of law and put it into this type of special community development district. It does require you have joint cooperation between that municipality and that district, and so the governing body has to approve that district within its boundaries, whatever the boundaries are formed, that's agreeable to both the municipality and the community development district, and you have to have a general plan that everybody abides by. They are there for a limited amount of time. You'll see the general plan is referenced through pages 9 through 12. You know, it's pretty specific, and I'd be happy to go through those specifics if you want. But basically it limits its purpose, it limits its time, it limits its scope, and you'll see especially there on page 10, lines 6 through 13, how they limit that in assessment and in scope. Then if we move on to page 12 through 15, these are copied verbatim out of the Title 18 statutes, pages 15 through 17. You either have to have a district board of 3 or 5 members, as well as a non-voting member from that municipality. So you have that constant collaboration and contact with the city council or your mayor of that municipality that works with this community development district. Then pages 17 through about 20, We go through the notice process. This is, you know, when you have the Administrative Procedures Act, if people have concerns, we have a process for complaints, a process for hearings, a process that if the election for the development of district goes down, you have to wait at least 1 year. But it's all a pretty standard process of law. We're just copying over to a community development district. Then on pages 20 through 22, we're talking about the relation of the community development district to that municipality. Basically, because you're within that municipality, the municipality gets to collect 1% for the efforts for the levying and the tax bond, et cetera. That's pretty much the bill. On page 23, you'll find that it's effective immediately, so we can get to work on developing our cities and towns throughout the state. And I would be super happy to answer any questions you may have.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On this bill, I was a no on in committee on it, and I believe that practically everything that needs to be done inside of a special improvement district can be done now. This goes beyond what the Constitution allows and gives them extra powers to make another district to build things that right now are extras to practically everybody else, but everybody's going to get a pay for them. On and against the bill.
Representative Lindholm.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and in favor of the bill. It's important to remember that these districts end at municipal borders, and that's what does make it constitutional. So while I respect the good representative's input on that, it is specific to remember that it does end at the municipal border. Thank you.
Representative Simpson.
And with the authors of this bill explained to me, if a large property owner within the city boundaries, for example, a 40-acre parcel, would he be able to form a district and fund his improvements in a development through this process and tie the municipality up in committing to actually go through the process and establish bonds that the municipality would be responsible for? Thank you.
Chairman Zwanenzer.
So, Mr. Chairman, I guess the answer is technically yes. It copies any other special district, so that is a possibility. You have to have at least 25% of those landowners agree to even put this before the voters of all of that district. And so if you were to narrowly define the boundaries, with any other special district in the state, they can do that as well at this time. I wouldn't say it happens that I can think of off the top of my head, but it is a possibility, yes.
Question being called. Miss Minority Floor Leader.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question. I am curious about if there's any limitation. So, for example, could a special district decide that they wanted to have more police protection and hire private security? Things along those lines. I mean, we've talked about, allowing municipal taxation in quarter pennies or something along that in your committee, I think it's number 6. But this seems like it could be either adding to or usurping some of that municipal control. So I'm curious at this point.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I want to back us up just a little bit here. For those of you who may not be familiar with Title 18, we have this title. It's called Title 18 in Wyoming. And it already allows for these types of districts in the county. So really, this isn't that radical of a shift in our law. What we're saying right now is, can we create a community development district within a municipality? That's what this does. There's a couple of things that you should recall here, or remember, or consolidate into your minds as we're looking at this bill. Number one, it takes 25% of the landowners just to create this thing, and I think that's extremely important. I think it's also important to note that when these community development districts are created, they're by property owners. Private property owners create these. So what do they do? they agree to do all kinds of things as private property owners. Number one, they agree to tax themselves. You don't have to be in this if you don't want to be in this. And number two, they agree to those services that are being referenced by the good minority leader. They agree to improvements. They agree to all of those things as private property owners. So when I look at this bill, I look at it as something that can accomplish goals outside of government, and it offers government an opportunity to avoid increases in things like taxes and services, to avoid those things, because as community districts, they're taking it on themselves. It seems like a dream come true. Vote aye.
Representative Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not speaking on or against, but I've been thinking about this for a while, and my concern is that when you have a certain neighborhoods that might be more affluent, say, and more capable of doing this district, and they start providing what are essentially city-type services. I'll use snow plowing as an example. Are we creating inequalities within these municipalities where certain neighborhoods are receiving services that other neighborhoods are not because they are not able to afford to form the district?
Chairman Swanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I think the answer to both of the last two questions are really found on pages 5 and 6. And so let me just read it. You can acquire, construct, operate, maintain improvement of local necessity and convenience. You can do any kind of infrastructure, and you can enhance the use and enjoyment of any improvement or facility. So what we're contemplating here, just to give you some examples, if you have a portion of your town, let's say a very large city like the one we're in, and let's just say my community, those of you familiar with my district, I have about half live in this kind of great area east of here. And let's say we want a community pool, right? And so we all as landowners in that area can get together an infrastructure improvement for that community pool that we service, right? We're not going to ask all 50,000 people in this town to put a community pool for our district in town in there, but these type of things would allow that. And so I have strong difficulty thinking, and the city still has to approve it, right? Your city council, your governing body. And so for any kind of personnel services like fire or police, I don't think it's contemplated in this bill. I think it's almost specifically prohibited, and nor do I think a city would ever really actually allow an increased presence of police in an area of town. And actually, that would probably be the inverse of what the last speaker said, because if that were to ever happen, I think you'd get maybe a more difficult area with higher crime rates in a city, and they would – I don't foresee that actually being a possibility when I read through the bill of infrastructure. Snow removal would be a service, but fire and police, I don't believe, would qualify under any of provisions on pages 4, 5, or 6 if you read through those.
Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Zwanitzer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 113 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed,
no.
Senate File 113 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 100. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 100, introduced by Management Council, Economic Diversification, Broadband Services, an act relating to economic diversification. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman.
Chairman Nicholas, you have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 100 do pass, and ask for your favorable consideration, and also ask for the favorable consideration of Senate File Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, I'll turn the explanation of both the bill and the amendment over to the good representative from the west side of the winds.
Mr. Chairman, I think we have a standing committee amendment. So you'll move?
Standing committee number 1 and turn it over to the side of the winds.
All right. Representative Somers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I'm going to do a little brief overview, and then I'll, before I go into the body of the bill, I'll go into the standing committee amendment and the committee of the whole amendment. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the 64th, I bring you Senate File 100 and ask for your favorable consideration. High-speed, high-quality, affordable broadband is essential if Wyoming wants to remain economically relevant in today's business world. The Internet has become a primary source for an individual and family's ability to conduct banking, provide education, purchase products, obtain information and news, and communicate with friends and family. In order to attract and maintain business, Wyoming needs to have high-quality broadband services in our business areas and in the homes of our citizens. In many areas of Wyoming, the return on investment is not sufficient to allow private business by itself to provide broadband to our citizens. Remember, we would not have had phone service in very rural areas based strictly on a private return on investment. Help was needed. Improving broadband was a primary recommendation of the Endow Executive Council, whose membership includes business innovators around the state. This bill is designed to be that help for broadband and was worked on in consultation with those folks representing private industry. This bill does basically three things. First, the bill creates a broadband grant program in the Wyoming Business Council for public-private partnerships to promote the expansion of access to broadband service in unserved areas, and provides a definition of an unserved area. Second, the bill creates a broadband advisory council and coordinator to oversee implementation of the grant program and to develop a Wyoming broadband enhancement plan. The coordinator position will not require the creation of a new position, as a vacancy in the business council will simply be moved to facilitate this transition. Third, the bill provides for an appropriation of $10 million for broadband grants and $350,000 for mapping broadband service in the state and development of the state's broadband plan. And I will walk you quickly through the bill, but first I'll turn your attention to Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. And I think the easiest way to do that is just to turn to page 9, and you can see the bulk of the amendment. And so if you go to page 9, line 8, and you look after entities, and so I'm just going to read it as it would say, kind of as it would read in there, evidence that no later than 6 weeks before submission of the application, the applicant contacted in writing all entities who are listed with the council as providing broadband service in the proposed area. And then really the other additions, Mr. Chairman, are just simply putting business in front of council so we know which council we're talking about, to define business council versus advisory council. And so, Mr. Chairman, that's really the bulk of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, and I would call for the question on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1.
All right. Question being called on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, and ladies and gentlemen, if you'd turn to page 14, and Mr. Chairman, this is really just a cleanup. And so if you go to page 14, line 5, and you would delete as determined and place in by reference to standards published. So the section would read, provide comparability to service offered in urban areas, both in speed and pricing, by reference to standards published by the Federal Communications Commission. So we don't like to directly hook ourselves into a federal rule. It's better to just reference that. And so that, Mr. Chairman, is Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, and I would either stand for questions or call for the questions on Committee of the Whole Amendment.
All right. Question being called on this Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 is passed. We're back on the bill. All right. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Nicholas's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 100 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 100 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill, for our consideration is Senate File 111. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 111, introduced by Senator Driscoll, Property Taxation, Digital Currencies, an act relating to property taxation. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Representatives Byrd, Claussen, Crank, Ayer, Gray, Greer, Henderson, Lindholm, and Laux. Signed, Representative Greer, Chairman.
Chairman Greer, you've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 111 do pass. And I further move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. And I'll go ahead and explain that and ask for your, try to dispense with that first of all. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 is pretty simple. This bill went into effect immediately. Our committee, after asking, could not see any conceivable reason at all that this would need to go into effect immediately. So rather, we moved it to the standard effective date of July 1, 2018, should it pass.
Is there any discussion on this? Representative Lindholm.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And it's not entirely not in any reason at all. So I'm going to push back a little bit on that. There was a little bit of a reason why you're effective immediately, and it's just based on the premise that, you know, we're trying to attract a whole industry here. That's it. We're doing it for nothing. These bills don't cost a dime. So when we're trying to attract this industry, you know, it does make good common sense. First of all, we're already doing the intent of this legislation. So the Standing Committee amendment to push it off until July actually does nothing because we're already doing this. So effective immediately actually makes more sense to what we're already doing.
Chairman Greer?
Mr. Chairman, I have no logical response to that. So I would ask for your aye vote.
Is there any other discussion on the amendment? Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. Question being called. All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has failed. Do we have to stand? No. All right, we're back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I'll turn the explanation of the bill over to the good gentleman from House District 1. Thank you.
I'm lost. Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Property taxation, digital currencies, members of the 64th, I'll be very brief. When it comes to digital currencies and how they're taxed currently, the revenue service that is internal, that is on the eastern side of the United States, has deemed that digital currencies are actually property. So in looking at that and in light of recent events, we don't actually do this. We don't actually collect any taxes on properties that are of a digital currency. In fact, if you look at the bill, you can see money and cash on hand is already exempt. You can see currency, gold, silver, another coin, bank drafts, certified checks, etc., are already exempt. This just adds it right in line with that. Follows a practice that we've been already doing. So it's a pretty easy piece of legislation. Vote aye.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Greer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 111 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 111 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 19. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 19, introduced by Judiciary, Uniformity in Domestic Violence Law, an act relating to crimes and offenses. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Beitman, Jennings, Kirkbride, Olson, Pelkey, Punnell, Salazar, Stith, and Winters. Signed, Representative Kirkbride. The bill was then referred to committee number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhardt, Larson, Schwartz, and Wilson. Noes, Representatives Nicholas, Summers, and Walters. Signed, Representative Nicholas. Chairman.
Chairman Kirkbride, you have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 19 do pass. For the explanation on the bill, our good colleague from District 48.
Representative Stith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 19 has a number of things going on in it, so take a deep breath on it here. Mostly we think of this as the strangulation bill. Right now, it does two things with strangulation of a household member. First, it increases the maximum penalty from 5 years to 10 years. By comparison, just note that currently, if you steal something worth more than $1,000, that's a 10-year felony. If you forge a check of any dollar amount, that's a 10-year felony already. And if you knowingly, intentionally, or recklessly assault, batter a woman who is pregnant, that's right now also a 10-year felony. So that piece of the bill, I think, really is just making strangulation of a household member by upping the maximum penalty from 5 to 10 years. That really is just making it more uniform with some of our other laws. There's more than that, of course, in SF-19. It also makes strangulation of a household member a violent felony. That does have consequences. Violent felonies cannot be expunged, and it's also a predicate act for being declared a habitual criminal, which is a big deal because that carries very long penalties. What else is going on in SF-19? It adds a laundry list of additional crimes that can be used to say that you are being convicted of treated as a second offender or a second time offender under domestic assault or domestic battery. I often get domestic assault and battery confused, but think of domestic assault as a swing and a miss. A domestic battery is a swing and you didn't miss. Right now, if you swing and you miss against your spouse, that's domestic assault. Right now, on your first offense for domestic assault, there's no jail time at all. This would up it to 6 months on first offense. So it ups the penalties on domestic assault. Similar, it also adds a laundry list of new crimes, essentially, not new crimes. Let's say kidnapping, for example, which before could not be used as a prior offense with respect to domestic assault or domestic battery, is now included. So there's a lot going on here, but here's the music behind all of this. The theme of all of this is that it's by passing SF-19, we send the message that Wyoming takes domestic violence and strangulation of a household member very seriously. It is in fact the case that strangulation of a household member can be a precursor to homicide. That is, if you've been the victim of strangulation, you're much more likely to be the victim of homicide. What strangulation of a household member is not, if brother and sister are wrestling and they are choking one another, that is not strangulation of a household member. And with that, although there's a lot going on in Senate File 19, it says that we take domestic violence and strangulation of a household member seriously. I'm going to ask for your aye vote. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Kirkbride's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with recommendation that Senate File 19 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 19 has failed. The division being called. All those in favor, please stand.
All those opposed, please stand. Less than 34. Senate File 19 has passed the Committee of the Whole. All right, the next bill for our consideration is Senate File 69. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 69, introduced by Select Natural Resource Funding Committee, 2018 Large Project Funding, an act relating to the Wyoming Wildlife and Natural Resource Funding Act. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Swartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman.
Chairman Paxton, you have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with the recommendation that House Bill, or that Senate File 69 do pass. And I will attempt to explain the bill. I'm going to keep it as brief as possible because I don't want to talk you out of voting for it. This is a bill that we see every year. It's the Wyoming Wildlife Natural Resources Trust Fund Large Projects Bill. And it has no expenditures from the general fund. It's strictly from the trust fund. This year, there are 8 projects that include 3 conservation easements and 5 habitat improvements, wildlife habitat improvements. We handed out earlier a handout that has some really nice color pictures in it that has a full explanation of what these projects are. I can cover them in detail, or you can read about them. And if you have any questions about that, I'd be glad to try to answer them. But in the interest of time, I would call for the question.
All right. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Paxton's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with recommendation that Senate File 69 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 69 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 58. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 58, introduced by Senator Pappas, Game and Fish Licenses, an act relating to game and fish licenses. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Allen, Clem, Flitner, Freeman, Garou, Haley, Halverson, McGuire, and Steinmetz. Signed, Representative Allen, Chairman.
Chairman Allen, you've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 58 do pass. And I will give you a little bit of a presentation on this bill. So essentially, what this bill does really is it authorizes the Game and Fish Department, the department that manages the fish and the game, the ability to make your license to fish or hunt concurrent with the season, if the commission so chooses. That's about the quickest way I can say it. So currently what all hunting and fishing licenses do is they're for the calendar year. But in the wintertime, you have, for example, an ice fishing season that might start December 1st or go to March 1st, something like that. And so right now, if you want to ice fish over Christmas and then again on New Year's Day, you have to buy 2 fishing licenses. And so what this would do is it would allow the department and the commission, actually, to adapt those licenses to those seasons if it were to pass. So I will stand for questions. Sorry.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a real quick question. I just briefly went through this, but how does this work in the association with the conservation stamps that have to be purchased for each individual license? And would those only be used for 1 year in a situation where a particular hunting season opens up in October and may go through the next calendar year?
Chairman Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Quite frankly, I don't know, but I think it's covered. When it says licenses, it may not be, but I will look that up and have an answer for you. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question?
All right, I'm trying to find it.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Allen's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with recommendation that Senate File 58 do pass, please say aye. Opposed, no. Senate File 58 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate Resolution 2. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate Joint Resolution 2, introduced by Senator Ellis, 150th anniversary of the 1868 Treaty of Fort Laramie, a joint resolution to commemorate the sesquicentennial of the signing of the 1868 Treaty of Fort Laramie. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, and Wildlife and Cultural Resources, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Allen, Klim, Flitner, Freeman, Garou, Haley, Halverson, McGuire, and Steinmetz. Signed, Representative Allen, Chairman.
Chairman Allen, you've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate Joint Resolution Number 2 do pass. And I will kind of go over this very quickly, but we've already danced this dance before with the other tribe and the other treaty in the west, southwestern part of the state. And so what this does is it commemorates the signing of the Fort Laramie Treaty 150 years ago. And the participants in that treaty were the Great Plains tribes. And so it, and you'll look in the page of, or the bill, and see that that was the many of the bands of the Sioux, the Arapahoes, the Northern Arapahoes, which live here on this reservation. And so I think it's just pretty much the same as the other bill in terms of what it does. And then lastly, I would invite you to the commemoration of that treaty. It will be at Fort Laramie, which is a very historic site, and that the main day for that is April 28th. So I would stand for questions.
Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Allen's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with recommendation that Senate Joint Resolution Number 2 do pass, please say aye. Opposed, no. Senate Joint Resolution Number 2 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 35. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 35, introduced by Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs. Military Service Relief Act, Additional Protections. An act relating to defense forces and affairs. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Blake, Brown, Court, Crank, and Eklund. Noes, Representatives Edwards, Laux, and Pivarinen. Signed, Representative Eklund, Chairman.
Chairman Eklund, you've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with recommendation that bill Senate File Number 35 do pass, and I turn the explanation of the bill over to my friend and colleague from the capital city here.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen of the 64th, I'll make this bill pretty brief here. Really what we're doing is we're saying that any person who is activated underneath guardsman duty into full-time active duty, basically, if they're ordered for more than 30 days or under 180 days, they can suspend their service for monthly contracts. And the monthly contracts are like your gym membership, cell phone service. They're listed on page 2 and on page 3. We have satellite radio communications, things of that nature. And if they go up and over 180 days, you can actually terminate it and or suspend the service. So this is coming out of a little bit of a long line of issues that have occurred in the past, especially here in this community, where active duty guardsmen are taken out and companies will not allow these people who cannot utilize these functions while they're deployed. They actually will not let them out of these contracts. So what this is doing is allowing them, while they're deployed for a shorter period of time, to suspend those services. But if they're deployed for an extended amount of time, past 180 days or over 6 months, they can end up actually canceling out of those services, and then when they come back. It also provides that they cannot actually have any retribution against them. They can't pay any early termination fees or something like that. So with that, I see a good tall colleague ready for a question, so I'll stand for questions.
Representative Lindholm.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So just going through the legislation, and I've got a question in regards to when does personal responsibility end? Because I have to go for long periods of time down to our capital city, and yet I don't have any special legislation saying I can automatically end my terms of service with certain organizations. Well, I don't mean to be pensive towards our good service members. Having been a former service member myself, I did not have these special applications in place because I knew that I was deploying soon. So with deployment coming up soon, there's none of these companies out there that are going to say, well, too bad, service member that's deploying to the Middle East. You're going to have to pay your athletic club gym membership or else. So I guess based on that premise, how far are we willing to go here to create these special attributes, I guess? So if you could answer that, as right now I'm on or against.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I would just respectfully push back a little bit on my stretch colleague there. And I would just say that, you know, in the purview of being in the Guard, you don't necessarily get the joy of knowing when you're going to be deployed. And so entering into a contract here and having the capability of exiting out of a contract that you may not be able to go into because of the calling and serving of your country is not necessarily always within your control. And so this is actually trying to provide that type of a little bit of flexibility for these service members who get called up against their will, whereas we do get to control when we're not in the military. A majority of the time, we may not be able to use these services. These people may not. And these people may not be able to actually step aside from that. So I think this is a good protection.
Chairman Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess in partial response, we know when we're going to get deployed, and it's at the convenience of the people, but we know when that would happen. And it isn't for 180 days, thank goodness. But this is a little bit different. I guess I'd like for people to keep in mind that in this conversation, that these are people that are... they serve at the convenience of the government, and they don't know when they're going to be deployed. And we have had some problems. Otherwise, the legislation wouldn't be here with companies that once they've got you under contract, they're not going to let you off the hook, no matter what. It doesn't matter that you're off defending the country overseas.
Representative Lindholm.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't mean to be hard on this situation. I really don't. I've got as much respect for those individuals that serve as you can have, having been a service member myself. I served from 01 to 06. You could say times were pretty tight at that time, that deployments were pretty quick. Still had plenty of time to go and end these contracts. So is this... I guess what it comes down to is this a huge amount of abuse that's been happening to our service members. Is that where this legislation comes from, where certain service members were being abused by athletic clubs and gym memberships, satellite radio communication services? Is that where they were being abused? Were they denied based on the aspect where they showed up with their termination paperwork and said, well, too bad? Because I seriously doubt it. So, if that, I guess vote your conscience on this. As a former service member, I'm saying probably stop, you know,
making these special pieces of legislation. I think they could probably handle on themselves. They're grown adults that you charge with defending your freedom and your country. I think they can handle a contract.
Representative Pieperinen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the bill, I was one of the no votes there. Very concerned that government gets involved in contracts between two parties.
Representative Laux.
Mr. Speaker, I just want to say thank you so much for the guy that dances with the clouds, being a service member and everything. These are hard things, and I sure agree with what he said. Every year we have more and more bills that come to us given, as I call it, treatment that they're grown-ups, and they ought to be able to handle that. So I wish you'd vote against this. Thank you much.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I worry about the unintended consequences if we pass this bill. Could a service member, an active service member, a guard member, go to apply for by a telephone and be turned down because he could be deployed and the service would have to be suspended? Could he be denied cable service because he or she is active military or guard and they could be deployed and the cable company would be forced to suspend services? I just wonder if this has been thought through all the way. Thank you.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I would just like to say I think that there's a few things here, and I appreciate a lot of the discussion here because this is a lot of discussion we had during interim work with this, as well as in the past committee here within the past couple of days here. I think the big thing to call out here is there was a decision a point that was made that, you know, most of these people can go up and they have the time to go cancel their contracts. Well, the problem is not everybody's letting them out of their contracts. We do have some nefarious issues here. We do have some people that say, no, you were on a contract and your cell phone is going to be charged regardless if you can use this or not. Now, that's up to the individual company right now to decide whether or not they're going to let you out of that contract or to suspend it. Actually, there is protections in federal law right now that if you go somewhere where the phone does not work for phone service, they have to let you out because of military orders. What this bill does really implies for the cell phone usage is the suspension portion of it, that if you're deployed for 90 days or 120 days, you're just going to be able to suspend that, come back, reactivate it. You don't lose your phone number. You don't lose anything else like that. This is not a nefarious bill, and I appreciate a lot of the discussion here. I think this is a good bill, and it provides the service members with the protections that they need.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Testimony during the interim was there are some bad actors, and granted, most of the companies here in the state of Wyoming are going to say, hey, no problem. We're going to let things go. We're going to let your gym membership lapse till you get back. You won't owe us any money. What we're concerned about is somebody can see that loophole and charge them. So I vote aye on this. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Oh, Chairman Eklund.
I guess I'd answer a question. I think it's really unlikely that you'd have the unintended consequences of a phone company or a service provider of any kind turning somebody down. Knowing that they may be deployed, it's unlikely. We rent houses in this capital city to service members knowing that they may not be in there, knowing that they may leave and their whatever contract they're in isn't finished out, but doesn't mean people don't rent their houses out to them. This is a similar deal. I guess again, we've got people here serving at the convenience of the military. It's a little different than the rest of us. And there are overall perspectives out there as to how friendly states are to the military. And I think this is just a bill that sends a message that Wyoming is in favor of the military, supports them, and does it with a little bit of action.
All right. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Eklund's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with recommendation that Senate File 35 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 35 has not passed the Committee of the Whole pursuant. All right. Pursuant to House Rules 10-5B, the bill having failed a voice vote, a standing division vote is required. All those in favor, please stand. Those opposed, please stand. Senate File 35 has passed Committee of the Whole. 31-23. Thank you. All right. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 60. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 60, introduced by Senator Nethercott, Wyoming Women's Suffrage Pathway, Highway Designation, an act relating to highways. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Blake, Brown, Cork, Crank, Edwards, Eklund, Laux, and Piperinen. Signed, Representative Eklund, Chairman.
Chairman Eklund, you've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File Number 60 do pass, and I turn the explanation of the bill over to my colleague from over the hill, I think. I don't see anyone rising to the mic. But who?
Minority floor leader.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm pinch-hitting, so hang on just a second. All right, so what this bill does is, let me just back up and say that we are coming up on the 150th anniversary of women's suffrage in the state. And there are going to be kind of numerous celebrations that go on from one end of the state to another. Every agency, every school, the university and our community colleges will be doing lots. And we're starting now. And one of the elements is to recognize what happened in a small town in the middle of the state and the travel that happened from that small town right around that area and then getting to Cheyenne. And there were a couple of individuals, in particular, the member of this body at that period of time who introduced the vote for suffrage. Also know that there were others that lived in that particular small community that were absolutely instrumental in women's suffrage. So this period, this highway is 19 miles of highway that is for the 19th Amendment, which granted women suffrage, ultimately. But I also want to point out that this is an area that this bill has in its signage, you know, and it will just be a sign that calls it the Women's Suffrage Highway. And for me, as a motorist driving that particular stretch, it really hits you about the difficulty of traveling around Wyoming at that period of time. It's a hard stretch of road. There's no two ways about it, even today. And so when you think about that as what's called the birthplace of women's suffrage in Wyoming and what happened, it honestly makes me think about history. So what this bill does is it simply designates this 19-mile stretch of road that's centered around that particular area. Can I say that? It's Highway 28. And it commemorates women's suffrage and that particular area of the state and that highway that was traveled to and from this place here in order for that vote for women's suffrage to take place. That'll take any questions.
Oh, Representative McGuire.
Thank you, on and for the bill, and this will be a great highway to take on the way to the one-shot hunt. Oh, wait a minute.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor? Oh, Chairman Allen.
Sorry to interrupt. So here's the thing. I would also stand and urge support for this because that was my great-great-uncle who lived there and saved that from an override attempt in 1871, so I stand in favor of the bill.
All right. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Eklund's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that bill number Senate File 60 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 60 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A little adjustment. Please insert Senate File 108 after Senate File 84.
Thank you, Majority Floor Leader. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 84. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 84, introduced by Senator Boner. Motor Vehicle Registration, Deployed Military Members, an act relating to motor vehicle registration. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Blake, Brown, Court, Edwards, Eklund, Piperinen. Noes, Representatives Blackburn, Crank, and Laux. Signed, Representative Eklund, Chairman.
Chairman Eklund. You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the favorable recommendation that Senate File 108 do pass. And I turn the explanation over to my colleague from the Capital City.
Chairman, 84 is the bill.
All right. 84.
Thank you, Chairman. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a very quick bill. Really what this does is if somebody is deployed and their vehicle license plates expire while they are deployed, when they come back, they are not charged for the back months they get charged the day that they come back from deployment and then for the year forward. Currently, as it stands, if somebody leaves and their plates expire, and let's say that's 4 months go by, they backdate that 4 months. They have to pay for those 4 months that vehicle sat in the yard or parked on the driveway or whatever. As long as the vehicle is never moved and it's never driven on the roadways, they do not have to pay for the time that it was not being used. They have 14 days from the point when they return to come back in. This actually creates a little bit of a burden on the military to actually have an affidavit signed that says this vehicle was not moved. That's submitted to the county treasurer. And once that comes back in, they're basically taken care of, and they have a little bit of a break there that they don't have to pay those extras.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Eklund's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File number 84 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 84 is passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 108. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 108, introduced by Management Council, Economic Diversification and Development, an act relating to economic diversification and development. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman.
Chairman Nicholas, you have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it does so with the recommendation that Senate File 108 do pass, and I would turn the explanation over to the bill once again to the good senator from the west side of the winds.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Members of the 64th, I bring you Senate File 108 and ask for your favorable consideration. As Wyoming looks towards economic diversification, we must look at all economic sectors in the state. Important to this effort is how we increase the sales of Wyoming services, products, and commodities, both regionally and internationally. As the states to the north and west begin to expand agricultural products into the Asian markets, how do we keep pace? This bill has six parts. First, the bill develops an international marketing effort for Wyoming services, products, and commodities. We know from our visits to Asia that we want our products, but how do we develop that market? Second, the bill expands the Wyoming Grown program to help market Wyoming agricultural products in-state, regionally, and internationally. Third, the bill seeks to encourage the development of USDA-inspected meat facilities in Wyoming. This could be accomplished by helping provide Level 1, Level 2 planning studies to support private or local efforts to develop small, mid-sized, or large meatpacking facilities. Fourth, the bill increases the size of the Endow Executive Council to 20 voting members to include the current non-voting members and creates a chairman and vice chairman position. Fifth, the bill directs the Endow Council to take a broad look at career technical education programs and facilities to further those opportunities in the state and to include those efforts in their 20-year strategy. Finally, the bill appropriates $400,000 from the general fund to conduct international marketing and trade activities and $2 million to the agricultural marketing subaccount for Endow for this. The purposes of this act, expenditures require the approval of the governor. And, Mr. Chairman, I will walk you through the bill. And so, Mr. Chairman, you go into Section 1 on page 1, and really, that just flops over to page 2 and goes into 9-12-105, Economic Development, Subsection A, Duties of the Business Council, and then we go into Subsection 7. In addition to conduct, and it adds this language, in addition to conducting international and other market research as authorized in 912-106B, the council shall employ or contract with persons for purposes of developing new markets and expanding foreign trade efforts, including expanding international markets for Wyoming services, Wyoming agricultural and other products and commodities, and targeted consumer advertising. Eventually, you're going to get on your desk a little deal from the state to the west of us that shows what their Department of Commerce does and shows the trade representatives that they have currently and the billions of dollars of trade that they do. We are behind the eight ball. And then, Mr. Chairman, it goes into 912-109, Promotion of Agriculture, and adds in a Section B, and the council shall solicit input from industry groups and in consultation with the economically needed diversity options for Wyoming, which is the Endow Executive Council, develop a strategy to create small regionally located beef processing plants inspected by the United States Department of Agriculture, and mid to large size processing plants for international sales, and then two, market Wyoming grown agricultural products in state, regionally, nationally, and internationally through market development, trade shows, and social media and other media outlets, and enhance the council's website in subsection 3. And then if you turn your page 4, you'll see where it's increased the size of those voting members of the council and replaced a co-chairman with a chairman and vice chairman. And then, Mr. Chairman, it adds in section on page 5, 912-1402, It adds in a Section 12 into the Endow Executive Council, and it says, they shall, in consultation with the University of Wyoming Community Colleges, the Department of Education, Department of Workforce Services, and the Wyoming Business Council, review existing career technical education programs and develop recommendations and opportunities. And so, Mr. Chairman, then it's, we go on over to 9.12.1404 on page 6, and Romanet I, and basically this creates the agricultural marketing subaccount. And then we go on to the page 7, and we show where the appropriation is, which is $400,000 for an international marketing. And then page 8, $2 million to that submarketing account, which requires the governor's approval for expenditure. So, Mr. Chairman, that is the bill, and I would stand for any questions.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to flesh out a little bit of the international trade components. I don't know anything about meatpacking plants, so I'm glad the previous speaker talked about them. Just to point out a few other things. On page 2, just so that you know, that language all from 92105 is all from the creation of the Wyoming Economic Development Act back in 1998. So that is old material, and even back then we were authorizing international and other market research, which is referred to in here. Most of the original focus was on agriculture, and I'm not sure where there was going to be a handout. Did that go out? Going. Okay. So I just want to add that I was actually developing my own handout, and I was intending, I don't need this, that's okay. I was intending to do a double-sided color handout paid at my own expense, because I am so excited about this opportunity, but I didn't want to duplicate his efforts. But I want to share a few things with you. For example, while I was looking this stuff up, I found a restaurant website. You know, you see them here, and it's got the menus and whether it's open and how many stars and all that stuff. And it was in this little island nation across the ocean where we might be focusing some of our trade representatives. And the restaurant was called My Home Steak. Doesn't that sound like you know, and then the thing again in that language. And what it actually said in English was Meat Steakhouse, and then it said, I can't say the proper name on the floor, but it was from the continent where they say things like Parlez-vous Francais and Wie geht es Ihnen? And so, I mean, first of all, seriously, I just say, how sad is that when our state has the best beef in the world? I mean, we need to rescue these vulnerable people from inferior beef. So then I want to add, there's like almost 500 companies in this state that export to other countries, and our annual exports are about $2 billion, depending on the year. Chemicals is the biggest category, almost $1 billion a year. And I can anticipate that maybe some people will say, well, we're doing so great, why should we try harder? And what I just have to say is that, you know, we have so many great products in this state, and yet we are 49th in exporting. So I think being small is not a good excuse. You know, we have an eternal, really lifetime of the world supply of trona, but that large country across the Western Ocean is trying to cut into our market, and we are not going to let that happen, okay? These are great jobs. There's a whole world of customers out there, but I think we all agree that you have to stay ahead of the competition. So the concepts would be to contract with international trade representatives. You know, there's some little countries out there we know across the east. We've talked about the west. We've talked about the difficulty in getting them to buy our coal. Well, if we can't sell them coal, we can sell them beef. I don't want to go on forever. I have like really a lot more because I'm so excited about this. Just a couple other things. Trade shows beyond ag. Okay, I found a firearms trade show. It's called the Waffensammlerbörse. And you can't get me for using a proper name because we don't know what it means. So we don't know what it is. But it's held in a little country that makes army knives. Then there is the Angelnjagen, a fair for fishermen, hunters, and nature lovers, all of them looking to buy binoculars and sleeping bags and tents that are made here in Wyoming. So we have awesome opportunities. Just want to bring some of them forward to you. So vote aye. Vote aye twice. Vote aye again. Thank you.
Question. All right. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Nicholas's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate file number 108 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
Senate File 108 is passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
All right. You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion carries.
The reading clerk, please read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, our Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. Senate File 40, amended. Recommended, do pass. Senate File 63, recommended, do pass. Senate File 89, recommended, do pass. Senate File 43, recommended, do pass. Senate File 113, recommended, do pass. Senate File 100, amended and further amended, recommended, do pass. Senate File 111, recommended, do pass. Senate File 19, recommended, do pass. Senate File 69, recommended, do pass. Senate File 58, recommended, do pass. Senate Joint Resolution 2, recommended, do pass. Senate File 35, recommended, do pass. Senate File 60, recommended, do pass. Senate File 84, recommended, do pass. Senate File 108, recommended, do pass. Signed, Representative Larson, Dan, Chairman.
Committee of the Whole, Chairman Larson.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
Members, you've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Congratulations, Chairman Larson. Great job. Thank you. Good job today, Committee of the Whole members, Chairman. Okay, we are on standing committee reports.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 23, Possession of Non-Plant Form Marijuana, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Representatives Biteman, Jennings, Olson, Pelkey, Salazar, Stith, and Winters. No, Representative Ponell. Excused, Representative Kirkbride. Signed, Representative Winters, Vice Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 83, Controlled Substance Prescription Tracking, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Schwartz, Summers, Walters. Noes, Representatives Nicholas and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 99, engrossed. State Fairgrounds, Horse Racing Events, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass, amended. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 105, engrossed, Drug Donation Program Act, expansion. Respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 110, Paramutual Events, Horse Racing Account, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass, amended. Signed, Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 121, engrossed, state-funded capital construction, 2, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass, amended. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 46, engrossed, Elections, Notices, and Resolutions, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Byrd, Edwards, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Lone, Sweeney, and Zwanitzer. Excused, Representative Blackburn. Signed, Representative Zwanitzer, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 56, Real Property as a Collateral Bond, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Byrd, Edwards, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Lone, Sweeney, Zwanitzer. Excused, Representative Blackburn. Signed, Representative Zwanitzer, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom is referred Senate File 73, engrossed, permits for small underground water wells, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Clausen, Ayer, Gray, Greer, Henderson, Lindholm, and Laux. Noes, Representatives Byrd and Crank. Signed, Representative Greer, Chairman.
Messages from the Senate.
Message number 223. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 3, County Clerk Map Recording Fees, Conforming Amendment. Ayes 29, excused, 1. Message number 224. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 4, Investment of State Funds, Amendments, Ayes 29, excused, 1. Message number 225. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 9, Obsolete Reporting, Department of Workforce Services, Ayes 29, excused, 1. Message number 226. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 21, State Parks Designations, Updates, Ayes 22, Noes 7, Excused 1. Message number 227, Concurrence Requested. Mr. Speaker, House Bill number 22, Quebec One Missile Alert Facility Fees. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the votes indicated. Ayes 22, noes 8. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Message number 228, concurrence requested. Mr. Speaker, House Bill number 101, Electronic Corporate Records. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 30. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Message number 229. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 110, Wyoming Retirement Plans, Member Accounts. Ayes 30. Message number 230, concurrence requested. Mr. Speaker, House Bill number 126, Limited Liability Companies, Series. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 28, noes 2. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Message number 231, concurrence requested. Mr. Speaker, House Joint Resolution number 8, 150th anniversary of the 1868 Treaty of Fort Bridger. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 30. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Message number 232, concurrence requested. Mr. Speaker, House Bill number 2, election law violations, penalties, and enforcement. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as followed by the vote indicated. Ayes 30. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Message number 233. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 58, Game Animal Licenses, Limitations. Ayes 27, noes 3. Message number 235, Conferees Appointed, JCC 01. Mr. Speaker, the President appointed Senate conferees to meet with a light committee number 1 from the House on amendments to House Bill 40. Senator Case, Chairman, Senator Scott, Senator Von Flader. Message number 236, concurrence, passed. Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bill listed below by the vote indicated. Senate file number 44, Fire Protection Revolving Account. Ayes 29. Excused 1. Message number 237. Concurrence. Passed. Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bill listed below by the vote indicated. Senate file number 50. Collection of State Financial Obligations. Ayes 29. Excused 1. Message number 238. Concurrence. Passed. Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bill listed below by the vote indicated. Senate file number 25, Corrections Exception to Defense of Habitation Law. Ayes 28, noes 1, excused 1. Message number 239, concurrence, passed. Mr. Speaker, the Senate did occur on House amendments to the bill listed below by the vote indicated. Senate file 2. Legislative Budget. Ayes 18, noes 11, excused 1. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Committee announcements. Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 4, Education, will meet just as soon as we can. And H38 tonight. We're going to do Senate File 72, School Finance Recalibration Transportation, Senate File 87, Hathaway Scholarship Eligibility, Senate File 93, Child Abuse Education and Prevention, Senate Journal 3, School Capital Construction Constitutional Amendment, Senate Journal 4, Public School Financing.
Chairman Bartle.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10 will be meeting 10 minutes upon adjournment, H37, to hear four bills, Senate File 78, Opioid Addiction Task Force, Senate Joint Resolution 5, Promoting Individual Choice in Healthcare, Senate File 97, Medicaid SNAP Eligibility Requirements, Senate File 91, Government Contracts, Labor Organization. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Committee number 7, Corporations, will have our meeting on interim topics tomorrow with the light committee from the other body in L54 from 12 to 2. Again, Corporations, L54, 12 to 2 tomorrow during lunch hour.
Chairman Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 5, Agriculture, will meet tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. in H36 to discuss interim topics.
Chairman Kirkbride.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet tomorrow morning at 9 in H38 for discussion of our interim topics, and then later in the week we'll go over and discuss it with our friends in the North End.
Chairman Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your House Appropriations Committee will meet on adjournment to hear Senate File 120. At 8 a.m. tomorrow morning, we'll hear Senate File 13, 118, 119, 79, and 71.
Power, Mike. Chairman Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development,
will meet tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., Joan Room H37, for the specific purpose of only hearing a motion to reconsider Senate File 74.
Chairman Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 8 will meet at its regular time upon adjournment tomorrow to discuss interim topics with the our counterparts from the other side. We will be meeting. Make sure you look at the list. This is a revised location, L-54. Thank you.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Joint Revenue is going to meet Wednesday, March 7, at 8 o'clock a.m. in room H36 across the hallway here and discuss interim topics. Thank you.
Any other announcements, members? Okay. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, general file for tomorrow. There'll be a new list out, but the first five bills are Senate File 15, 17, 75, 68, and Senate File 4. And with that, Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10 a.m. tomorrow, Tuesday, March 6, 2018.
A little Freudian slip.
Yeah, really.
Okay. Members, I just really a great day of work. Appreciate your hard work. Our session staff here, all you guys, this is we did a great job today, and our LSO staff behind us back here in the bullpen. Appreciate everybody's work. Teamwork makes a dream work. Teamwork always wins, and right is might. And with that, I really am appreciative of all your work. So keep up the good work, and we'll come back rested and ready to go tomorrow. You've heard the majority floor leader's motion. All those in favor, please say aye. Those opposed, say no. The House is adjourned until Tuesday, March 6th at 10 a.m.